Yeah, we can start.
Okay. Good evening. I'd like to call to order our work session for April the 15th, 2015. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance together and then a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. For our work session this afternoon, we have introduction and overview of research capabilities from Emily
Like.
Okay, Ms. Emily Like, CDPED, Economic Development and Workforce Coordinator. And then we have Community Development and Business Update by Bobby Papa Who. All right. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. My name is Emily Like, and I work for the Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development. So we are the regional economic development organization that serves nine localities, including Fluvanna County. And one of the advantages that we offer to our partner localities are our research capabilities. There are a number of great research tools and databases out there that are quite pricey to subscribe to, and so it's very cost effective for us as a region to subscribe to some of these tools and offer it to our partner localities rather than having each of our partners subscribe individually. So I gave a presentation to our board of directors back in February about these capabilities. And Mr. Nichols and Mr. Popowitz invited me to come today to share with you just so to inform you about kind of what we do and what capabilities we have. So in today's presentation, I'm going to do a high-level review of five of the databases that we use. The first one is VanillaScan or VirginiaScan, and that one is actually the only of the five that is publicly available. Then we'll go over Research 360, the Hoover's database, JobsEQ, and Help Wanted Analytics. And so I'm going to walk through what each of these databases are and then also give you examples of instances where we use the databases in our day-to-day. So the first database is called VanillaScan, and this can be found on our website. It's provided through the State Economic Development Organization, the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. It's actually been updated today. It was rolled out. So if you go on our website today, you'll see a different version than what you'll see tomorrow. So I know you're just itching to go check it out, but just wait until tomorrow and you'll see the new version. It's going to be called My VA Scan. And basically what it is an online repository of all of the sites and buildings in our region. And it allows us to filter our results or filter our search by location, property type, square footage, utilities, transportation access, and lots of other different areas and features. We primarily use this when companies are looking to either relocate or expand and they want to find out what's available in our region. It allows us to quickly be able to pull up lots of information about what we have available. And oftentimes we're not given a very long turnaround time, so it's helpful to have all of this information at the ready. So this is an example of what the database looks like, and I printed out the slides for you if you wanted to take a closer look. But basically, you see the search bar at the top, and so if we know the property that we're interested in, we can just search for it there. But if we don't, we can use the filters on the left-hand side to kind of narrow down our search, and then all of our results pop up on the right. And we can click on any of the buildings to find out more information about them. So for this presentation, for example, I pulled a search of all the industrial buildings in our region that are for sale. And so our list is over on the right, and I clicked on the Carysbrook plant, which is in Fluvanna County, just to show you what it looks like. So when we click on that, we see a page that pops up lots of information about the sites, the building specs, you see ceiling height, floor lease, for sale, the area, some information about the utilities, access to transportation, even labor statistics. And one of the great things about this database is that it has a feature that allows us to pull a one-page printout of the property. So it looks like this, and I have one here. And so what we do oftentimes is just is pull these one-page documents and submit them to the companies, and it gives us a consistent way to show the information. So that's the first one. The second one is called Research 360, and this is a GIS mapping and reporting tool. We primarily use this database to pull demographic information within a specific geographic area. So it takes all of the information, or all of the area that we're interested in, pulls all the demographic information for it. It also has the ability to pull the number of establishments and employees by industry and business mapping. But we, again, primarily use it for the demographic information. So to show you what this looks like, I typically hang out in the geography section here, which allows me to define the area that I'm interested in. And just to give you a sense of the types of selections we can make, we can go as broadly as a county. So I could do a search for demographic information for Fluvanna County on its own. I could put in an intersection and it would pull information that way, or even a specific address. So for this example, I put in the Klockner Meadows building address. And once we put in our address, we have the ability to select trade areas, so areas around that specific site that we want the demographic information for. We can do a radius around the site, so it'll draw a circle around the site and pull all of the demographic information within that circle and put it in a report for us. We can go up to 500 miles, so that gives you a sense of how broadly we can make it. We could also do drive time. So say we wanted to, rather than 20 miles of a report, we'd like to see 20 minutes drive time, so it'll draw kind of a squiggly line around the site with the drive time. Or lastly, we have the ability to pull a threshold. So say we wanted to know how far we had to go from the Klockner Meadows building before we hit 1 million in population. We can do that too. So it just depends on what the need of the company is. To show you how this works, I just pulled a report of a 1 mile, a 3 mile, and a 5 mile radius around this particular site. And so as you can see in the report that it pulls, there are three circles around the site, 1 mile, 3 mile, 5 mile, and it pulls demographic information, so education, population, race, age, gender, household income, all of that into a report, and we can do it at the click of a button. Wow. All right, so the third database is called the Hoover's database, and this is a subsidiary of Dun & Bradstreet, and it's a database of over 85 million companies and over 90 million individuals, and it provides us information on company location, size, finances, contact information, and more. And we primarily use this when we're going to talk to a company and we want to familiarize ourselves, or our ED partners are going to talk to a company and want to get some background information about the company so that we can learn where they're located, what some of their contacts are, some key individuals in the company, just so that we can familiarize ourselves with who they are and maybe what some of their key decision drivers will be as they look to relocate or expand their operations. So to show you this one, I just pulled a report of National Filter Service. Unfortunately, this record is not as robust as some of them are. So one of the downsides of the Hoover's database is that some companies have a lot of records out there that they're able to pull, and we can learn a lot about them. Other times, there's less information. So we have found that this database has more information than any others, but it is one of the pitfalls. All right, so the fourth database is called Jobs EQ, and this is provided through Chemura Economics and Analytics, and they're out of Richmond. And it's basically a data aggregator of a bunch of official government data sources. So it pulls from even more than are listed up there in a way that's very user-friendly and easy to customize. So rather than me having to go to each one of those individually to pull specific data points, I'm able to go into Jobs EQ and find it all. This database also allows us to customize by region, which the official data sources do not allow us to do. So that's very helpful. And JobsEQ also has some forecasting and analysis capabilities as well that take that data and make projections to the future. So an example that I'm going to give you takes some of the labor market data and projects it to the future and allows us to make decisions based on that data. The example I'm going to give you relates to the Piedmont Workforce Network, some of the work that's being done there. But I do want to stress how important workforce and labor market data is for economic development as well. It's consistently one of the top 10 considerations of companies that are deciding to relocate or expand their business. It's a huge issue for them. So we use JobsEQ both on our workforce side, as the partnership is the host of the Piedmont Workforce Network, but we also use it on our economic development side. So to give you an example, one of the projects in 2012, I believe there was a target markets study that was done on the Central Virginia region. And that study identified the 6 industries that this region has a competitive advantage in. So the Piedmont Workforce Network took this study and really delved into it to identify, okay, we know our 6 industries that we have a competitive advantage in, but what occupations are in those industries? And what of those occupations are currently in demand? And what occupations are projected to be in demand? So we use this database to pull a lot of data regarding that. So to show you kind of what we did and what we're continuing to work on, we used this industry occupation capability of JobsEQ. So we enter in industries, in this case IT and telecommunications, and it pulls up a list for us of all the occupations that fall within that industry. And the ones that are listed on this page are not the only ones. It's just all that would fit on the page. Trust me, it goes on for quite a while. So we use this to pull all of the occupations within the IT and telecommunications industry, and you can see there's current employment, regional average wage, a 10-year replacement demand. So those are people that are either retiring or turnover, and then 10-year growth demand are new jobs in that particular occupation. And then both of those added together are 10-year total demand. So we pulled that for each of our 6 target industries for every county and for the region as a whole. And then we also pulled occupation gaps. So this is a projection from JobsEQ about over the next 10 years, what occupations have projected gaps or shortages, and what occupations have projected surpluses. So we were able to kind of combine those 2 data sets together to come up with a top 10 list of the top 10 occupations in the IT and telecommunications industry that are projected to be in demand over the next 10 years. And we were able to incorporate some of the occupation gap and surplus data. And so as you can see on the last column there, there are a number of occupations that are highlighted in red. And what that means is that they have projected shortages over the next 10 years over 5 individuals. So you can see we have a lot of occupations that are projected to be in demand over the next 10 years, and we don't have existing workforce to fill those occupations. So this really helps the Piedmont Workforce Network as they work with the community colleges on training and credentials to kind of get our existing workforce up to the needs of what the industries need in terms of workforce. So we've done this, like I said, for every county, for every target industry, and we're using the data as a basis of a series of roundtable discussions that we're hosting with local employers to kind of say, okay, this is what the data is suggesting. Are these occupations in demand in your specific company? And if so, what credentials do you need to fill those? All right, so the last database is called Help Wanted Analytics, and this is our newest database. This is a tool that aggregates all of the online job postings. So everything on Monster, Indeed, Simply Hired, even Craigslist is located on this database, and it deduplicates the job postings so that we're able to have a real-time look at what's being posted in the region and in each of our localities. So this is a very helpful tool to use in conjunction with JobsEQ, because JobsEQ gives us all that great official government data. But because it is official data, it comes out quarterly. So there's a quarter lag time. Help Wanted gives us real-time data to kind of compare with what's going on a quarterly basis. So just to show you kind of what this looks like, I pulled a report of the mid-monthly volume of job posts for the region, and I just wanted to point out, in this case, the region is the Piedmont Workforce Network region, which is 11 localities versus the 9 localities in the Central Virginia Partnership region. So it's a larger region, and during the period of February 14th to March 13th, 6,072 jobs were posted in the region. In Fluvanna County, during that same time period, 26 jobs were posted. When we look a little bit closer and dig into Fluvanna County specifically, we see a breakdown of the types of jobs that were posted during that time period, so full-time, part-time, etc. We also see a list of the top employers that posted during that time and the occupations that were appeared most frequently in the job postings. And we can click on any of the employers to find a list of what occupations they have posted right now, any of the occupations to find out more information. But I chose to dig into Fluvanna County a little bit more to pull this. So this is a look specifically at Fluvanna County. We see that the salary being offered for jobs currently, average or median salary, is $37,800. We see that the average posting period is 46 days. So on average in Fluvanna County, jobs are posted for 46 days before they're taken offline, presumably because there's been a hire made, but that's not always the case. And then, oops, up at the top, there's 41 current job openings. So this is really helpful to give us a real-time look at Fluvanna County specifically.
No, not just us, that's the county.
Just advertise for the
Fluvanna County area.
Okay. Yes, we could look into Fluvanna County government specifically to find out, but this is in the county.
We fired most of the staff yesterday. And I'm leaving it at that, so.
Yep. So when we scroll down this page a little bit more, this will help explain a little bit more. We see the top skills that are being advertised in the job postings. So computer-based training appears a lot. We see certifications that are being requested, CDLs, and that's something we hear from employers, so it's really great to be able to cross-compare it with the Help Wanted data and say, yes, we are seeing a demand for CDL drivers. Employers hiring now. So we see a list of employers in Fluvanna County that have job postings that are active right now, and then employers who have hired in the past. And we're able to click on any of these to really dig deeper into them. And so that's what we've been doing as part of this labor sector strategy that we've been undertaking with the employer roundtables. So I know that was a very high-level overview. I would love to answer any questions you might have about our research capabilities and what we can do.
What about the two vacants, school buildings that we have vacant? Would they maybe qualify for industrial development potentially or not?
Well, possibly. We can certainly put them on vanilla scan, though. They have to do scan up and see what kind of bites we get.
I mean, they could be worked on and brought up to standard, I would think, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, there's certainly properties that are available now that are modified for a variety of different things.
Have we moved out yet on the advertisement yet?
Writing the advertising, comparing out, you know, we'll have you come in when we get set.
Okay.
And Vanilla Scan also gives us the ability to enter as much information about as many buildings as we want. We don't have to make them active. So we can just keep them kind of on the back burner. And when we want to make them active, we can. When we want to take them off, we can do that as well. So it's pretty flexible in that way.
So we have the capability of running these. So you have to run them for us.
I run them for you.
You have to run.
Yes, but in conjunction with your...
With Ms. Hopkins.
Yes, ma'am.
Some of the information we have to be careful with, too. We can't just print a report and share it with anybody.
Right.
Some of it's some of its information for specific business aims or purposes. And because the data, because the data sources are not free, there's expense involved. And if we selectively give this out to, you know, civilian private businesses, then there's some distinct unfair advantages. So there are some parameters that we can do. But if we're working with a business, we can certainly use this data and probably help support that when trying to land a business or expand a business.
Interesting.
As an example, I'll use Mr. O'Brien as an example. If he wanted some of this data for his business, it would be unlikely that we would provide that through Fluviana County because his business is in Albemarle or Charlottesville. But representatives, if you were trying to expand his business, representatives on the Central Virginia Partnership from that area could access and work with you on business expansions. Mm-hmm. It really depends on the locality and the area and what the aim is.
Okay, very interesting.
Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you
very much.
Okay. I think these go hand in hand, so I'm glad that she went first and was able to give you some of this information. Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm here to give you kind of a business update. It's going to be a little different than what we've seen before. I think I try to give you more of an overview of what's going on in economic development. This is a little more specific, even though I can't get down in too far in the weeds of some of these things, but wanted to have an opportunity to kind of give you, showcase what we're working on right now. One of the things that we've been seeing in the last year is our new business trends and opportunities for Fluviana County. We've seen a lot of small business transfers from Albemarle and City of Charlottesville. Specifically, you just handled, I guess about 6 or 7 months ago, a school that was a private school that you had to do a zoning for. That is an example. They left Albemarle County because they could not get through the zoning process quick enough. We've also seen a number of small business startups because of the same reason. They can't get zoning and in a timely manner, so they've decided to come to Fluviana County because we go through the process pretty quickly, about 90 days, sometimes 120 days, but it's pretty quick. Some of the other trends we're seeing more real estate for sale in Zion Crossroads right along the 250 corridor, which is a good sign that people are starting to hear our message and feel like they have an opportunity there and our citizens have an opportunity, so I'm pleased with that. And then, of course, we have a current pipeline of potential businesses that we're working on and keep in constant contact, and those include potential business that we come here, some of our partners, and also developers that may want to come to the area and develop a business park or some other type of mixed-use development that would be acceptable in Zion Crossroads or other areas of Fluviana County. So why do we think we're seeing some of these trends and opportunities? Well, as I mentioned before, our planning and zoning process is more efficient in Fluviana County than some of the surrounding areas. Like I said, we try to get things through within 90 to 120 days at the outset, depending on what we have and how much work we have to do. I believe that the ease of working with our staff, I've gotten several comments from different folks of how easy it is to work with the planning staff. They walk people through the process. They don't, if there's a problem, they let them know right away. And we've been working on making our customer service one of our top priorities in planning. So I think that that's a very important piece, especially when you're working with businesses, that they feel at ease at working with county staff and don't feel like they're just being pushed off or being told no. We've been networking, of course, with commercial developers and large-scale businesses. I think that is a key component to how our system works. We're able to put together maybe one or two businesses that we may need to get a certain project going, and we're starting to see some things develop from that we wouldn't have seen develop if we had not been networking out there and trying to put those connections together. We also network with our economic development entities like the Secretariats of Agriculture and Commerce and Trade, Central Virginia Partnership, et cetera. Those, as you just heard, they are very, especially Central Virginia, they're very involved with what we do and how we are able to identify some of these opportunities. So the other main reason, I think, is our location. We try to tout that as much as possible. We are in the middle of the state. We have great locations in getting to Washington, D.C., to Richmond, and we have several different roadways and accesses to those locations. So it's not just you're going down 81 or you're going down 64. No, we have Route 6, we have 15, we have 29. We can get to most of the locations in Northern Virginia and Richmond from several different areas of our county, not just 64, even though that is probably the most prevalent. We have some dynamic there that's really important. Some of our missed opportunities, I wanted to kind of show you this. Project Pumpkin, we didn't meet the water parameters. That's a state project we just didn't meet the water parameters, so we couldn't even put a property in to see if we could get that particular project. We had a hydroponic facility that's probably going to end up over in either Goochland or Greene County, and there again, we didn't meet the water parameters for that. Project Echo and Project Solaria, and then we had a brewery that is in contention in our region up in Culpeper, but there again, we didn't meet their water parameters. So, and then the other things, we just didn't meet any of the parameters or most of the parameters that they would need, like building size or types of gas or electric that they may need for some of these. And then one of the things that we were looking at with Smith Drug, they're not yet looking to make an expansion, but at least we've made that contact, and they actually supply Jefferson down at the lake. One of the other things that we're working on are the site readiness studies. We have one study that was completed a little less than a year ago, and currently have one study underway, and we have two inquiries about the site readiness study. If you remember the Timmons talk, we were talking about the Tier 1, Tier 2, 3, 4, and 5. This helps our private partners out there to figure out what things they need to do to make sure that their site is ready for a business to come in and relocate. And so we've been trying to get that message out to our owners out there, and we have gotten some inquiries, so we're excited about that those inquiries are actually coming in. In fact, we had a guy today that called about his site, and we were able to inform him about a site readiness study, and he may be interested in doing that. So some of our current and most viable opportunities for some of our bigger opportunities. There's a defense company that's looking in our area, probably about 500 jobs, $40 million investment, $385 million in potential revenues, and about $2 to $2.5 million in potential direct tax revenues annually. I think that company, if it comes in, will be a great boon to our community. It'll provide some other outside investment, not just on the facility, but from the area that it relocates to. Just recently, we were able to put together a couple of different entities for the hospital possibility. That would probably bring about 300 new jobs, total investment and revenue we're not sure about yet, but if we can put those two entities together, I think that this is really a viable option for us and maybe something that we'll be able to pull in rather quickly. The other one is kind of on the books already. They're starting down the process of planning. It's an electrical and mechanical contractor. They're in planning now, and I think they have a public hearing here shortly. Somewhere between 5 to 25 new jobs. We don't know what the total investment will be because he still hasn't worked all that out, and it may take some time for him to work out that kind of stuff. But possible first-year revenues of about $9 million. So I think that's a pretty good startup, and we'll be off to the races with him. So that's coming soon. So I'm definitely happy about seeing that. Some of our delayed and less viable opportunities. We had the All Good Music Festival. We'd been working with them for about 2 years. It would have been a tourism project. They bring in about 25,000 people over the course of a weekend for about 4 days. High-end bands from around the country, They would have been, I think, a good fit for us here. They would have done other things other than just the All Good Music Festival, but that's their main focus, and we wanted to try to accommodate them, and we just haven't been able to find them a property as of yet. They are in West Virginia right at the moment, but we think we're going to still keep working with them, but it's hard to keep, finding properties and then not be able to utilize them. We have a concrete plant that may decide to relocate here. We believe that they found a location, but we can't confirm what they are doing at this moment. They're keeping kind of a tight lip, so we'll stay tuned for that.
A location here or somewhere else?
In Fluvanna.
In Fluvanna. Oh. Yes, in Fluvanna. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then we were also talking to a multinational meat processing company, and they have delayed opening new plants that would accommodate their international market processing. When you're talking about meat processing, the cuts of meat in the United States are different than in some other countries. So they have to have different processing. So they are looking at expanding so that they can do more cuts for that different plant and not have to shut down operations, retool, and then come back and do the cuts that they need for the other. But they've decided to delay that opening. So they've kind of, they haven't cut off ties with us, just they haven't offered too much more information. Okay. The way ahead, the way I see it, we need to provide adequate infrastructure, and that includes water, sewer, roads, rails, natural gas, electric, internet, whatever we can do to make businesses realize that we have these things in either one location or several locations, so that we know that we have a good chance at landing some things. Without those, we can't land them. We just can't. I can't land a company that needs water and sewer if we can't provide that. Can't land a company that needs internet if we can't provide that. So, also, one of the other things is provide solution to challenges that help businesses understand our commitment to them. Like I said, we have put a big emphasis on customer service in the planning department. We don't come in when the business comes in. We don't tell them no to everything that they say. We say, okay, let's see how we can make it work for you, and whatever that solution is, we try to accommodate that. If we can't, then well, we may have to make adjustments to the zoning and other things like that, which gets you to the next bullet here. Pave the way through revised and streamlined zoning rules. We need to make sure that our zoning rules are business friendly, and when we find something that is not, we try to come back to you, and we're working on a number of them to make sure that we can say yes rather than say no. The other thing that we are working on that I mentioned earlier is increase the number of site-ready properties. The site readiness studies are the first step in that, and as long as we have private partners that are willing to continue to do those site readiness studies and then take those recommendations and work with them, we can actually increase our inventory to a point where I believe that we'll have several properties up there that are site ready, and we'll have a really good opportunity to bring in some things that currently we can't even touch right now. Provide friendly and positive service to potential business relocations. You know, when a business recruitment comes in, Steve will tell you that the first thing we do is we meet with them, and then Steve meets with them, and then we meet with the department heads. And finally, we go to the regional folks and to the sometimes to the folks over at the chamber. They know all the different players in our county, so they can feel comfortable in coming in and asking questions. They don't have to feel like they're just meeting somebody over the phone or via email. We want them to have a personal experience here, and personal experience will go a long way. We've got a lot of interest because of that, and I am very proud of our guys in planning, especially that work with us in doing that. Working with our regional and state partners, can't say enough about CVPED. Those guys are great. They provide us with a lot of information. They get us contacts when we're looking at something, and it helps me with research. I don't have to do as much research when I can just go over to them and say, okay, this is what I need, and they can provide that information to me. And the last thing is continue focusing on our networking opportunities. the more people that we talk to, the more connections that we make with business to business or other things, or businesses here, or contractor and developer contacts that we can make, the better off we are, because then we have a focus and we can make those connections and we can make things work that other localities can't make work. So, and with that, I'll take questions.
Okay, any questions?
Do we have any current stage 3 site ready?
No. I guess the closest thing we'd have is the Carysbrook plant. It's a building that's, you know, it's fairly site ready. It's older, so it has some issues. But sometimes the location gets people. You know, a lot of the folks that are looking for buildings want something a little closer to 64. They want to be able to get trucks in and out, things like that. And sometimes that can be a challenge. But they haven't been on the list very long. They just recently said we could go active with it.
And Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, that building is still empty, is that right?
That is correct. And they have decided not to do anything with that building. They've held on to it. I've called a number of times, and they decided not to get rid of it. And I don't know what the reasoning was behind it. But
so it's not for sale anymore?
No.
Oh, okay.
So that's another one that's...
We have a lot of Tier 0 sites in our county. You know, there's not even the building in Stellark. But as we get more signs pop up along 250, especially, you know, you get to Tier 1, and it doesn't take years necessarily to get to Tier 2, 3, 4 if the big stuff is there. They can do some of the studies themselves. They can do different testing, but they've got to have infrastructure. And so as your plan goes forward with putting infrastructure design and crossroads, you'll be able to move a number of properties along there to a higher tier status, which just makes them more marketable to businesses looking for properties to be able to settle into.
If I had to guess, that once we put in infrastructure, a lot of our properties can easily move to Tier 3 and a higher end Tier 4.
What about the empty buildings that we have now where businesses have moved out? Is there a good sign that that small businesses take that space? You know, I look at Fork Union. Over on the right-hand side, it's the grocery store, the little hardware store. I don't know how long they're open. There's a church, the driver's ed, but the doctor has moved out, and those little places. Do we know who the owner of that site is? Can we encourage her to update that front storefront and do something to attract businesses, because it's very 19...
You're talking about the little shopping center?
Mm-hmm.
Where the Village Restaurant
used to be.
Where the Village Restaurant is?
No.
Yes.
Further down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, yeah. Where the Village Restaurant.
No, further down.
Yeah,
no.
Where the Eye Doctor used to be.
Where
the church is.
Okay. The American Legion has a spot there.
Now, across the road.
One of the problems is, unfortunately, Fork Union is our least populated part of the county. There's 5,000 people in the biggest piece of real estate in Flavanna County. And so for a business to settle there, there either has to have enough support from local folks to be able to need that service, like a gas station or a grocery store, things, or it has to be a business that doesn't rely on local customers and it's just relying on workforce and transferring things in and out. So trying to get the Carysbrook plant sold and occupied with something, and trying to work on this big, huge defense contractor project that Bobby's been working on for 2.5 years, make a huge difference.
Yeah.
But
because
the small business.
We have plenty of business at Dollar General, Family Dollar, grocery store, drugstore, and the drugstore is based because the pharmacy is there. But other than that, I realize that we don't have enough customers, and the academy young men come out periodically. They used to come to the town. And then something happened and they pulled them back. But now I do see them coming out and shopping, but it's not a lot of those kids.
This is on a different note, and I apologize for being late, but the cell tower site in Ken Store, they actually started doing some land work there yesterday.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Our didn't know if y'all were aware. Every time I drive by, I went to call y'all, and I was like, that's that
service. There were some ENS issues that we worked with the developer on, and he took care of those, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, they had taken trees down today when I went by.
What about the one on Mountain Hill Road?
I don't.
It's just standing. Nothing's on it.
Jason, you know the status of that one, the Mountain Hill Road?
I don't think they've started.
The pole is there.
Yes.
The monopole has been up. The pole.
Yeah.
It's up. It's nothing on it.
Yeah,
no
sure
provider is on it. Any, you know, if we could find out what's going on with that.
Well, you'll get a tower update here pretty soon along with the E911 project.
Sure.
We can track all the tower SUPs and the time on those.
Right, they're all on track. The last update you did was about 5 or 6 months ago. You decertified 3 or 4 of them, and those notifications went back to the tower provider. Pardon?
We sent letters out last summer.
Right.
We done. Any analysis on the real estate pricing that we have along the 250 corridor and how it compares to potentially other areas or not?
No, we haven't done that, but it's something that we will probably be starting to do because of the...
it's going to make a big difference when water gets there.
Yeah.
Right now, it's what's it worth.
Yeah, it takes a real niche business to be able to go there now that doesn't need the same kind of infrastructure, but as this expands, we're trying to develop packages for real estate agents so that they know key facts and information so they can give it to business when they're working with commercial sites. We're also going to need to do some zoning work up there too. So
right now, it's probably worth what the land's worth to put cows in. Seriously, because there's no infrastructure.
Well, it probably has a little bit of anticipation baked in.
It's not going to kick in until we pull the trigger.
A little bit of anticipation.
Very little. But I'd like to see a lot. But reality.
That's why I'm curious to see.
Me too.
You know, for years I've heard, and I think most recently when we were at St. Paul and Peter's, we heard a citizen say that Fluvanna County was the hardest people to work with as for businesses coming in. And that perception has been out there for a long time. And I know it's not that.
That person's been saying that same thing for years.
How do we get? Can we invite that person in? What can we do to for people to look at it?
I don't think that's a real perception.
Yeah. I know it isn't.
I'm not sure you can fix that one person, Mr. Booker. But
it's one person.
I don't know if that's just one person or not.
I don't think so either.
Then when you find him, Mr. Sheridan, let me know so we can talk to him.
Absolutely.
Because I can tell you that our process is a heck of a lot easier than most counties around here to be able to get through planning. Mm-hmm. I mean, we hear that all the time.
Yeah.
And we need that message.
There are certain projects that are difficult, but in general, it's easy to get through.
I just like for you to fix that one person. I'd be happy.
The most common complaint
that may be a lost cause. I'm not sure.
sign ordinance. Oh, a lot of people.
We're going to talk about that tonight.
Really find that.
Well, you might want to talk about it now because you've got plenty of time to kill, and I've got the stuff available.
We got plenty of important stuff other than that to talk about tonight with the budget and everything else.
What about? Well, this is something that sort of needs to be taken care of.
What is that?
The sign issue, and it's not something we're going to act on. It's something that needs to be directed to staff and the Planning Commission. But you want me to carry on that?
Sure.
Or?
As long as you all want to, it's okay with me.
If you look at that sign that's up there now, that's the farmer's market's new sign. And if you look at our 2008 sign ordinance, I believe it was December 2008, that's actually, depending on who you're talking to, is in violation of our sign ordinance. And in the past, going back 2 and 3 years ago, the prior planning director went to every single business in the county when the sign ordinance went into effect And I would say almost no one's here anymore as far as staff goes that was involved in that. And what happened was they said, get rid of this, take down this, this has got to go. And they gave people like 30 days to get rid of them. That was one of them, exact kind of signs. And you saw them at businesses along 53, businesses on 15. They were regularly used, and they were all removed. Now, then there's some question of whether that can be done in a temporary manner, like a one-day thing. And you, I picked up the sign ordinance yesterday and read it, and I think two of us can come to different conclusions on what we're reading. And what I'd like to do is make the sign ordinance common sense and easier for businesses to attract business without making it look like eat at Joe's, get gas kind of thing here, you know, with flashing lights and in whatever on signs, you know, the obnoxious stuff. But letting people know that you're in business, letting people know that you have a farmer's market that's set 4 acres back off the property right now at Pleasant Grove, but so you can't see it driving by, you're going to need a sign. Then we have to be careful of what we make for county signs coming down with decisions, because there's a flashing light section in the ordinance, lighted signs section in the ordinance. I don't even know that the school sign actually meets our
marquee.
Yeah, meets our ordinance, and those kind of things. I just think when Mr. Sheridan mentioned, you know, being easier on business than Bobby did, and more inviting, like Mrs. Booker said, this is one of the keys. Albemarle County and Charlottesville are terrors on advertising signs. You can't fly balloons off of cars and signs. Like if you're having an automobile sale, you can't hang balloons on your antennas. We don't have antennas anymore, do we? Well, they used to put them on antennas of cars. And you can't do that. You can't remove a bush that's covering a sign because the bush is grandfathered in when they approved the lot. There's a million. I've talked to businesses that are on 250 there, bypass, and they're hit every Sunday. They're watching for them, and that's how they do business. So it's tough. And I don't want us to get to that point. But we've got Zion's Crossroads coming down the road, and we're really not ready for it because it's a new thing. It's a new way of attracting businesses that wasn't there in 2008 when the sign ordinance was enacted. And I'm asking that we either send it back to...
Revisit it
and send it back to staff or the proper channels to get back to the Planning Commission to take a look at this, and in the meantime that we allow and the last thing was, I think the county should be under the same regulation and standards as our residents and businesses. Absolutely. Because it sends out a bad message if we're allowing something and we're not allowing a business to do something. And at the same time, I don't see a big deal of this, but one person that sees that sign, that banner up there that we made take down their banner 2 years ago, and we have something across the street, and you're going to find the banner out there next week, it just becomes something that we should get ahead of. So all I'm asking is...
That's temporary.
Yeah. No, that's...
Because we're thinking about, in the Pleasant Grove at the bottom, is to have a running advertisement.
You can't have a moving...
Yes, you can.
See,
you can have a flashing sign.
There's where... That's where you and I read the same thing and come up with something different. Okay. And if we ask the county planner how he reads it, he may come up with a third opinion. But I call a flashing sign anything that's moving. It doesn't have to be beep, beep, beep.
Yes, it does if it's flashing.
See, you and I will never
flash,
see the same thing.
There's the definition in our zoning of a flashing sign.
Okay.
You made a flash intermittent change in degree of intensity, brightness, or color.
And that, to me, if you have a moving, ever-moving message going across.
That's not flashing.
It needs to be, if two of us are, if two of us don't agree, then it's subjective and it needs to be a little more clear.
There's a lot of things that are fairly subjective in zoning, so we have to be attuned to that. But
I mean, I can see where he's coming from, because it does change, so if you're standing back from it, you got light, you don't have light.
Right.
But
if you don't want to have any electronic signs, all you have to do is say that. We'll put it before the Planning Commission.
I'm not saying that. I'm just suggesting that maybe we take that out.
The sign ordinances that are there apply to everyone. Okay, we follow the same ones. Even though county is exempt by our rules, by the way that the code was adopted in the county of Flavanna, we're exempt from the sign ordinance. We follow the sign ordinance. So, for instance, on this one up here, the reason the banner is acceptable for Food Lion, the reason the banner is acceptable for Blue Ridge Supply, the reason the banner is acceptable for the BP station across the street is that it's a temporary sign not exceeding 32 square feet, made of fabric or other flexible material, etc. That's the definition. Mm-hmm. That's the code section that defines all these things that are in other code sections. It's in the same group. And I know it's a little confusing, and I wish...
You can go back to strictly prohibited in the first page. Go to the first page.
That is the first page.
All right. Restricted signs. The following types of signs are prohibited in all zones and all zoning districts. They're prohibited. So now you go down to pennant signs, which that is.
Right.
It's a pennant sign. Right. That says it's prohibited. Now you go to page 3.
That means permanent.
It does not say permanent on anywhere on that.
Because when you get here, exempt signs, temporary signs are exempt. So even the...
But where do you see pennant signs?
Where do you see
pennant signs?
When you go to the definition for temporary sign, there.
Where do you see it?
Temporary sign.
It doesn't say pennant signs. Those are strictly prohibited.
Okay, so let's see if there's one for pennants.
I've read the entire thing. Mr.
Albuck, you haven't, because you haven't read this section, because it's not in the same one. I didn't even know it was there till today. That's why I'm trying to show this. I didn't even know this till this afternoon. The signs...
There you go. Right. And that is not permitted. It's not permitted.
This is not the same thing. A pennant is one or two corners, like a pennant that comes out. You know the streamers that come out, like the triangle ones? That's a pennant. I mean, I know the definitions are goofy. We'll go look at it.
Okay,
maybe we can make it simpler, because maybe the definitions can be in the same code section.
It's
just been that way for years. It was just written that way.
It's a pennant sign.
I think the larger point is really the important thing. The sign ordinance.
Uniform application.
Right, uniform application, and the sign ordinance could be a little bit more flexible. I mean, there are folks that, for example, off-premises excluded, if they have applications or they have somebody willing to let them put up a sign that's off their premise but still available to them, I think that's something that should be considered.
Sure,
like a direction sign.
A direction sign, whatever the case may
be. Or you can put it at a corner,
just
intersection.
A corner sign,
those are already authorized.
Located here. I think that the friendlier we are without being gauche, the better.
Yeah, but I couldn't agree more. I'm just not sure that I've heard anything in the last couple of years where there was a problem with the sign.
Well,
and if there is, we definitely need to know about it, because if we're applying the rules the wrong way, fine. Or if there's something that's too restrictive, and if we hear about it, then it'll come to the Planning Commission, it'll come to you, and we can change it.
Let me give you an example. And there are several.
Okay.
You can tell me if I'm wrong, but the ice cream, Jim's ice cream,
right
up here, had
Papa Jim's.
Papa Jim's had no sign on his SUV when he went to get the sign approved, it was denied.
Because he wanted to put it in the VDOT right away.
No. It was something to do with it was blocking the sign of the business next to him or something like that. Nonetheless, there was an issue with that. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
If you go, the landscape guy on the right almost at Science Crossroads had another minor issue.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there have been instances of.
And the sign up on the florist on 53. Yeah.
And as far as directional signs go, at the corner of Union Mills Road and South Boston Road, used to be a sign directing you to Better Living that had to be removed.
There's a welder in town with complaints.
And the sign making the left-hand turn off South Boston Road, going up Monticello Road, is a grandfathered sign. I think the only thing left on it is Ace Hardware and Century 21. But it used to be able to put up before this sign ordinance in 2008.
Yeah, that sign, though, the one you're talking about at the corner of South Boston, like Monticello, was just put up illegally. But
it's grand. What, the two that are left up there are grandfathered?
Those are, yes. It's the other one that got added.
But it's a great area to be able to put a sign up there to say what's sure. on that street yeah. going up there.
Yeah.
There's many things. There's gymnastics. There's two gyms. There's a granite business up there. So all I'm saying is maybe we could ease up look at some of those things, because they were unintended consequences that came from this. This is well done, and it took a long time. I think it took a couple of years to put this together before it passed. So just some tweaks.
One of the comments that was made to me, and I don't ask me who made it, mm-hmm. I can remember this being made, mm-hmm. was our code book is very, very thick. Mm-hmm. It's very, it covers a lot. I mm-hmm. mean, it's very good at that, but it may be overbearing.
Okay.
I don't know. That was a comment that was made to me.
Government regulations are the worst ever. I just know that our code is so much shorter than most counties, and I still think we could tweak it, because I think it should be easier to find stuff, and I don't think you should have to go to two different code sections to find out what the definition of a temporary sign is or a directional sign that's clearly exempt.
That's all I'm saying. If five of us can't agree it says something, then I think we need to make it a little clearer.
Okay, so from this discussion,
I'll just add another task for us to review the
okay, the review code. The okay, and if things can be put together, it sort of, when you read it, covers everything rather than having to go from one
section to section.
We'll also set up an evening community meeting just to invite businesses in to comment.
So.
That would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think until then that farmers market sign served a necessity.
It's a temporary. And what was the temporary meaning?
Because I could not see it.
30 to 60 days, depending on what it was. But this one's up for less than 24 hours once a week.
Once a week.
Okay. Yeah, they just put it up and take it and then take it down.
Yeah, yeah. It goes up the day of the farmer's market.
And then they.
And it's very visible. The first day I saw it last week I thought it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I also wondered whether it was legal or not. But because we checked the temporary, it is only up for a very short time.
So I just wanted to make the point that you asked about the high school. Yep. From my understanding, Mr. Tugwell was asked about the school system to review that for compliance with the sign ordinance at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the question is not that whether it was approved or not. The question is whether people are interpreting the code guidance the right way. And if any lighted sign is considered a flashing sign, then we get big problems.
Yes.
Because you got lighted signs all over the county, gas stations and grocery stores and things like that. So that wouldn't be any different than the one at the high school. But we'll look at it and see. Maybe there's a better way to make the definition clear that rollers that are not flashing are acceptable or something. We'll look at it and see and check some other ordinances. Because, so, I mean, we're certainly intending on moving forward with a sign at Pleasant Grove, unless the board decides not to do that, to advertise events and things like that.
The school sign says, make them current.
Yeah.
I stopped by.
That was current.
May,
still flip
March
every day.
The 15th was 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
Take
month
that
ago.
Down. Or with ago. Nothing on the board.
Play must be full.
Assign someone to keep them current.
That's not my job.
Well, I think you should take that job. All right, it's 5:00, and we were going to break at 6:00. Y'all want to?
We can break now.
Break. Anything you need to? Anything else?
Well, I mean, I don't want to hold you here forever, but there's got to be something you all are interested in. Well,
the economic development I asked you about, would that be better now or the outlanding?
Would that be better under? Jason's working up a brief for you on it.
Okay, Jason wants to talk with us, so can you do that now?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Smith, would you bring the idea to us so we can...
No, don't blame him, Mrs. Booker. It's your idea.
How much?
Okay.
It's a good one. He's just
some time.
It's a great one.
Okay.
So, time to stand up for you already.
We talked a couple months ago about taking some field trips around the park on the trails and maybe take a look at some of the facilities that we operate, Parks and Recreation. So I wanted to see if you all had some time later this month, and we could schedule something to just go out on the trails and
take
a hike.
Yeah, do you want to do it?
I'm gone.
You're gone.
Well, many of them. I was unplanned Saturday.
Be ready. Ready to get eaten by cheaters.
What is the best time?
That won't be the first time.
Huh? What's the best time for you? You're working people.
Yes.
Weekends.
Weekends. Like a Saturday?
Weekends would work. Mm-hmm. Preferably in the next maybe 3 to 4 weeks, just because of tips.
We'll throw you on a four-wheeler.
Oh, yes.
And take you through areas and routes.
I remember somebody taking me through a four-wheeler.
No problem.
I thought I was going to fall off the end.
Sure, we can get to certain points with a four-wheeler, but...
Yeah.
Do we have one?
We've got a gator. We can stuff some people.
Okay. We have gators. So some of the trails, when you go down the road.
What's a good time for you all on Saturday? What would be a good time? How long would this take? A couple hours?
At least 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's a good time we'd like to start off?
3:00.
6 a.m.
3?
6.
Okay.
3 p.m.?
Just...
Yeah. It's not worth that.
Earlier in the morning, it'd be a little bit cooler.
10. I mean, we'll have to do a 2x2 anyway, so if you got a couple, unless we call a meeting, but if you got a couple that want to do morning, a couple in the afternoon, we can do that.
I have to.
Okay.
I haven't gone over the new stuff. I'd like to go over the new stuff.
All right, let's make a decision. You want to be in the morning?
About 10, about 9, 10.
You'd like to go 3?
I'd like a turkey hunt.
Yeah, afternoon's better.
All right, it's afternoon for him. I'll go anytime.
Yeah,
and you'll go anytime.
About anytime.
Anytime. Bob, you'll be back by then.
By when?
By the time we do. You said a couple. You're just going away for how long?
Till middle of May?
No, middle of May.
6 would be pretty, but 6 is pretty early. You might have turkey. You might walk up on a turkey hunter at 6:00 in the morning.
You could better not be one in there.
There may not supposed to be one in there, but
it might be. Bob will be gone.
I'm good at any time.
He's good at any time. But when are you coming back? May what?
16th.
May 16th.
So we'll send you some dates and times, like a little chart.
Great.
You all can pick. We'll pair up with a couple, one or two at a time, and whatever's convenient for it, we'll get them set up.
Not by the night.
Okay.
Right.
We get to see the new weeds.
What are we missing there, though, that we need to see?
We're just hiking some trails and showing you everything beyond the trails.
We're riding as much as we can. Down through there, I'm just wondering. I haven't covered every inch of it, but I bet I've covered
the new part. We haven't seen.
Well, I can show you maybe parts that you haven't seen as far as popular places.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that we've done in the last few years, as far as putting benches up, and
the nice thing is the signs on the trees.
The signs on the for the horseback riders. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to go over some of those explanations as well.
And make sure you pay attention when you walk the horseback riding trails.
Yeah.
So I'll send some dates out.
Okay.
To coordinate.
And how many trails we have out there?
We've got about 20 miles of trails.
Okay. Yeah, you've told me that.
We won't hike every.
So, speaking to a naturalist, I guess is the best way to put it. He's probably going to contact you, but he's very familiar with the type of indigenous plant life we have, what's edible, those kinds of things. And he was talking about creating a booklet, if you would, and also potentially some signs.
That'd be perfect.
Tours.
They're already working on it, though, aren't they? Walter and a few others.
We've got a...
Maybe connected with that same group.
Steve, I think, was the guy's name.
Maybe we've talked
with Walter. That's what a naturalist is?
Yeah.
What's his last name?
I don't know off the top of my head. I can get it for you. I told him to contact you.
That'd be good.
Sounded like a good idea.
Because I know someone who worked
master gardeners, but he was very specific as to the type of knowledge, the type of trees, what plants sure. could be eaten, what could not be eaten.
That'd be great.
If it comes in a plastic wrap,
is this all volunteer work?
You can eat it.
Is this all volunteer work?
Yeah, I think he was volunteering.
That's what I like.
When do you have the first graders out there?
This coming Wednesday, or next Wednesday.
Okay.
From 9 to 1.
Crazy. With 250 first graders.
Make sure they get in there at 9 or before.
Make sure they all spread themselves down. I'm serious.
Where are they going to be located? Back where the house is or out in the ball fields?
We have stations set up. The email that I had sent has it should have a logistical map on one of the pages. But we're probably going to start at the pole barn. And each group will be broken up into about 40.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
They're going to be split up into about groups of 40.
Education trip, because they're going to talk to them.
Parents are going to be assisting as well. So
as long as you don't lose some of them.
No.
We'll have plenty of volunteers.
That's a lot of paperwork. We don't want to do that.
That's a lot of little people. Oh, they're going to have a ball. Oh, my God.
They're going to have something.
So really quick, a couple other items that Parks and Rec is working on. The Heritage Trail Foundation presented an idea of having or incorporating a fitness loop from the dog park down to Sandy Beach. And they're interested in working with us on funding the project, along with having volunteers put the equipment on the trails.
And that's in your budget.
Okay.
They're funding that.
When will the fourth graders go out for Agriculture Day? Have they already been?
The fourth graders?
They go in April. What is today? This is April.
Today is the last day to get your taxes in.
They're not funded this year?
Not that I know of. Where do they usually
pay taxes?
That's right.
What do they usually do?
They bring in all kind of agricultural things for the kids to see and do, and what if I to be able to tell you one thing they did. They do something with water and...
Maybe John would know with the Extension's Office services.
I haven't heard about that one this year. I know they've done it in the past, for years.
Yeah. That's why I'm worried, you know.
I thought you were talking about going up to the farm up at Stanton. They have a 1700s.
Yeah, they've done that. Kids have gone to that one before.
Yeah. I've done it twice.
One other project that the Heritage Trail Foundation had mentioned was incorporating a disc golf course. And I think, Mrs. Booker, you were at the one rec advisory board meeting when we had somebody come out.
Yes.
Essentially, it's kind of like playing golf. It's not as expensive, mm-hmm. But you have a Frisbee. And you're trying to get it into a basket, a metal basket. Mm-hmm.
Frisbee golf?
Frisbee mm-hmm. golf.
Yeah.
So if we're gonna work on that with that team and see what they're talking about and see what areas and stuff and come back with a proposal. But it could be another nice addition to the park that we can get some people
and
to
they have one in
help put some posts in. And
they've got one at Walnut Creek, which is
it's very popular.
Yeah, they even do that in China, in Cuba.
With some of the things, I would advise you to also be in touch with Mr. Paul Cherico at school. They are now milling their own boards. And making a lot of stuff. I mean, they're going to make us
some stuff. He's the new shop teacher.
That's new. Don't ask me what it
is. Who is that, Mr. Who?
Paul Cherico. But they're going to help us out with the baseball program. And if you wanted birdhouses or something of that nature, I'm sure that they could
work with us on something. That'd be great.
Yeah, the Frisbee ones we'll use steel post, steel round steel post. But for those stuff, that'd be good.
Well, Mr. Jennings might be able to do something with ag. Because he just welded some stuff for us.
So. Really?
Great. I know that he welds. So. Mm-hmm. I would talk to them, see if somebody could do that as a school project.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So
thanks for the
other sort of quasi-tourist economic development slash Parks and Rec is going back to the whole idea of, you know, setting out programs and laying those places so that people can canoe and
boat
kayak and do that throughout the county. I know that Albemarle County is putting one in Buck Island.
Right,
coming up soon, so that's going to be a good midway point. And, I think, Mr. Sheridan, you'd mentioned a few other locations that would be ideal, and that should be something that we kind of look to promote regionally, I would think.
Right.
Yeah.
It's quite popular up, say, in Front Royal, a lot of canoeing up mm-hmm. that way, and brings a lot of tourism. So
we've got the water trails.
You have so many choices here mm-hmm. that you're not yeah. locked in on one. You can...
Like the Wabana River.
You got two
basin,
rivers to float, and if you want to trout fish.
Yeah.
I still say that's one thing
can
we
you
need
say
to promote
Ann
trout fishing in the heart.
Kayak.
Oh, I've been in a kayak
yeah.
in Ann Malik.
Ann Malik. They're going to do
Mother
something
Earth and
in
Bear,
May.
Her grandson.
Yeah.
Her grandson Bear is cool.
Uh-huh.
So, Ann Malik, you say?
Yeah. Ann yeah. and Al Mark. They,
yeah, I've done a float with her.
Something's coming up.
Well, I'm working on a presentation for that.
Okay.
And I'll talk with you guys in May.
Thank you.
And drink.
Sure. So a lot of stuff going on with Parks and Rec too. Now, I don't remember if I put it in before, but Jason, is it already installed yet, the rail?
Yes.
Yeah. So the new railing has got, we have pictures, it'll be in the next brief, but the railing got installed on to the third floor. Did I send? Oh, that's right.
Attendance is really increased. I was up there yesterday. That book's filling up.
What was this?
The railing on the third floor.
The third floor, front row.
He sent you a picture.
Yeah, I saw it.
And then one last thing that we're working on.
I did notice a few dead people had been through.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys want to pass this around? This is a rack card that we're going to be working on.
It'll be the hard card folded in half, or front and back, that we'll be to be able to put in for tourism things.
So we'll be able to place those in all visitor centers.
Mr. Papa is working on one also that's kind of the triangle thing with mm-hmm. Monticello, then our stuff big, Pleasant Grove House, Old Stone Jail, Courthouse, and then Montpelier. Right. So you've got kind of a trail of things you can go to.
And you said we've had a lot of tours.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. People are starting to call in.
Now, one place to, I had to call him back, or call him up and talk to him. I had one of our citizens that lives in your district, Ms. Booker,
mm-hmm.
brought me some pamphlets. It was one of the places up in Nelson. Mm-hmm. He went up there just hiking, and it had each different county had just brochures.
Right.
And if we could get stuff around, well,
so if we get some brochures
right.
made,
right.
we're going to definitely.
And he goes,
there,
I didn't see one from Fluvanna. I said, right. Well, I will address Mr. Smith, and we'll take care of that.
Mm-hmm. That's the two we're developing. That one and this other one is the one Bobby's got. Bobby's one will be more broad based. This is specifically for the Pleasant Grove House, right. But
you know, I was thinking about when Bobby was talking, and I know he's doing this is connecting these businesses that we're looking at that's coming in with our school system, working with Gilliam, because the Korean Tech Center at the high school needs to be, I think there are some careers that are not in the building yet, because you're talking about electrician. I don't know if they have electric, they are not, they used to have a 2 or 3 year. Do they have it in the high school now?
No, I do not believe, no ma'am. And I tell you another one, we were at VACO, and Tony and I got to eat with one night with a gentleman, 83-year-old chairman of the board from wherever Fitzgerald's hometown is, but he was a Mason, and he was going home the next day to start a job at 83 years old.
Mm.
And that's something that we stopped doing about 25 years ago,
right.
And there are not many qualified, certified brick masons.
Because we want our kids, to be able to.
But I still say that we've talked, and I don't want to open up this can of worms now, but the Fire and Rescue Association, a huge help for that would be if we could get Firefighter 1 and EME done at the high school level for seniors that would be interested. I mean,
Firefighter 1 is going on now, but not in high school.
I'm talking about, sure. They've got the facilities to do that, and that would be huge. I mean,
it's all about funding too. So.
I'm not trying to get the cart in front of the horse, but I'm saying if one day that's one thing, that's one thing that would be a benefit to us.
You're right.
We need
to start focusing on alternatives to college.
Right.
Careers.
Careers.
That's the
because everyone is not made for secondary schools.
Absolutely. Right. But
and kids learn to read when they read about things that they're interested in.
Yep.
And they're reading vocabulary and everything expands.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Pence?
I know you got other questions.
Steve Pence.
Pence, yeah, that sounds
Is that who it was?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, Steve Pence.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. Okay, Steve's with the Extension Agency.
What else? What other questions?
Anything
so,
else?
What I got to talk to him about, I got to do.
With regard to, I think I heard either you or Mr. Popowitz say that we are kind of working on a sort of a real estate document.
Yes.
Promoting the county real estate in general.
Especially for real estate agents to use. Mm-hmm. When we were at the Cars Luncheon, that's where the genesis of the idea came from when I talked to them. And so we're working on trying to figure out what's best in that package. That they can have a simple, easy folder that's got things in it that supports a new resident coming in. Yesterday I just got Aldemar's example of the new resident handbook or the new resident guide. And so we'll have something similar to that, but also the business environment and what opportunities there are and who you contact for this and who you contact for that. And then even copies of the Citizens Annual Report would be available so they can give it to potential folks coming in.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, granted, we're not necessarily looking to attract more residential.
No, but there are people going to move here and you want to make them welcome.
Oh, we have a lot of vacant homes.
Sure.
Yeah, so I mean, certainly an attractively priced housing.
Right.
I think the paper today said Fluvanna was, I mean not Fluvanna, the general area, real estate prices were up about 5%.
Except so we weren't in there.
We weren't in there.
No, I know, but that pushes prices, yes. And the more, right. The more the more growth in prices in the area, the more likely it starts to spread from that standpoint. So I think that's an important.
Well, the good thing right now is that if they went up and if we didn't, that means our prices are even more affordable.
Right.
And because we were one of two that didn't this time, but it does affect affordability. So.
Sure.
Unless our taxes get so high, right, they don't want it from now.
Well, when you're
you guys can't talk about any of that until after you vote on the budget side. Sorry,
no, it's not meeting.
take it.
Okay, I think we still have
Hawaii.
We're going to
5-0. Hawaii 5-0.
What is
trying
mean?
To drive to. 5-0.
Right.
Oh,
let's drive to adjournment.
I think we have a few extra minutes, and we talked about developers and we talked about Zion's Crossroads and land properties and so on. I see a developer that's over there kind of twiddling his thumbs, and I thought maybe we could invite him to say a few words if he'd like
to you,
since I know he's pretty active in that area.
Mr. Smith.
If I would like to invite him up, if nobody objects.
That's up to you.
Mr. Smith?
Which Mr. Smith?
Keith Smith.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Great presentation, Mr. Popowitz.
I can answer any questions.
Sure. Well, I know you've been working pretty tightly with Louisa County and that area in general and the Zion's Crossroads areas, and of course, you're involved in real estate. And maybe you could just brief the board on your take and some of the steps that we're doing and some of the steps that you think we need to continue to pursue and any insight you might have into that.
Well, I can speak from my perspective. The process has gotten 100% better under Mr. Stewart's tutelage and Mr. Popowitz. So I'd have to, from that perspective, give kudos. As far as the market goes in Zion's Crossroads, and I sent Mr. Popowitz a email when I was sitting there, I'd be more than happy to volunteer any of my time to give a market analysis of what's currently on the market, what's selling. I do a lot of research around this area and the state, and some of the stuff that the previous speaker, the young lady was here, I have access to. But I think you mentioned something about some property for sale in Zion, and that's the old glass property, and there they have that on the market for $65,000 an acre for A1, which is extremely high. I would encourage as a citizen to re-bring up some of the things that Mr. Nichols, I think, discussed sometime last August, actually August a year ago, about some of this overlay concept. I think that would be a wonderful thing to do. Because actually I had a client of mine ask me to do some research on that, and looking to bring in mixed use commercial and so forth and so on, and they just moved on to something else that A had the water and B had a little bit better of an overlay of zoning. So I would encourage that, picking that ball back up if it's at all possible.
Now we're pretty much ready for that, right? I mean,
it's indeed the path we're going to be going. As you have approved these various things, that will be coming forward from the planning department to say, here's the alternative options, which ones do you want now?
so we can then start getting it through the processing and getting it approved. There's not much sense in doing that if you're not going to fund water and sewer infrastructure. And so now that that's kind of gone forward, we need to put those things in place.
I was actually discussing that property the other night at the Price Breaker, and with water, then it becomes somewhat reasonable, right? I mean, it's still going to be high, but
it's very high, actually. Yeah, with water and sewer.
With water, that enhances.
I think the overlay, if you're able to do the overlay, I think you can find somebody willing to spend that kind of money to do it. You know, the rezoning process is extremely expensive. Again, my hat is off to the planning department. They've done a wonderful job the last 6 months, 12 months. But I think if you can do an overlay on that, it makes it more attractive. And I think if Mr. Popowitz is willing to do it, I can do a bunch of market assessment. We can start plugging in with water, without water. I'm doing four projects in Charlottesville that are mixed use between condos and commercial for several clients, and I have a pretty decent database on what one can do and what one cannot do in here. So I'd be more than happy to volunteer whatever time.
Thank you.
But you guys are definitely on the right track as far as the process.
When you say $65,000 per acre is high, what can you put that in comparison to what?
I was trying to do some research on the phone, but the iPhone is good, but not that good for that stuff. To give you an example, in Charlottesville, and I apologize for the vernacular, raw dirt, which is what that is, runs about $30,000. That's downtown Charlottesville. $30,000 per residential unit and or 150 square feet of commercial. So the price per acre is really not that relevant. What's relevant is what you can do with it. Mm-hmm. So then it's not very complicated math. You figure out what you're paying for it, open up your ordinances, see what kind of commercial, what kind of density I can have in there. You work with Mr. Popowitz and find out what kind of businesses we can bring in. And so I'd have to spend some time to do an analysis. I don't think I could rattle a number off the top of my head. But I would suspect water and sewer, you're probably looking closer to $25,000, $35,000 per acre. Just keep in mind regular A1, because that's really all this is right now, right? Because it's A1, it's in a good intersection, but it doesn't have water and sewer. It's maybe $4,000 an acre. So if you take that versus 65, is a big differential.
You can put a price on anything. Excuse me? You can put something out there for anything.
Mr. Glass is not a motivated seller.
Right. I mean, you can ask anything you want.
Sure. So I'd be more than happy to help in any way. I was excited to hear about your economic development stuff, so that's good stuff.
Okay.
Is that
Thank
it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When is our comprehensive report? When is that?
Comp plan will be coming in June, July.
Okay, Mr. Stewart.
After planning.
Comp plan.
The Planning Commission is in the final stages of doing some edits, and probably June, July time frame. Okay. And to tag along with what Mr. Smith was saying about the overlays, the kind of language that supports those is in the draft right now.
Great. And the comp plan, I understand, won't be as thick as it has been. It's going to be more.
It's definitely going to be more readable and less verbose.
Lots of bullets.
Great. That's good. Okay. Now, if I'm looking at, now the comp plan is going to, how many years, 2050? I know it's 5, but you're going beyond. Are you going to 20?
It's 20 years.
20 years. Okay.
It just has to be reviewed every five years.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a clear future on where we're going? For example, I'm thinking of water. When we think of water, we're thinking of Zion's Crossroads. We're thinking of down, maybe up to Dixie. Do we have a plan? Are we going to work on a plan where water and sewage will be in all of the growth areas? Are we that far?
Your master water sewer plan is heading towards development, because that's what you approved some time back out of the $575 that was set aside for the design at Zion Crossroads.
One of the things was the design. One of the things was the county's master water and sewer plan. So Mr. Stevens is heading in that direction.
Okay, yeah, because I think
that will cover that, everything.
Yeah, because I think the community as a whole, like my 5,000 people in Fort Union, they want to see a benefit for them where the water, where is it going? They think we're putting all of our ducks up in that part, and we know that's the place we want the growth, but we also need to satisfy the people who are out in the southern part that something is coming with their way as well.
But you would never put water, public water and sewer, in any area in the Fort Union district, except the core.
Sure, just
right.
Planning it.
And so definitely what's happening there is trying to identify additional sources of water so you can make the reliability of the system better and rest the wells and maintain your equipment.
Sure.
But for sure, that's definitely part of the master plan.
I think we need to make that clear to people. That message needs to get out that this is everybody.
It benefits all residents. I mean,
well,
jobs,
it's certainly not going to benefit everyone immediately.
It'll be
jobs. We're running that line up north, and that's where our money is initially going. So it looks to me like whatever money's left over, you want to tax more, then you can do some of these things you're talking about.
No, but the thing I'm saying is just that we need to have, people need to understand that eventually is coming.
This is our starting point. This is not our ending point.
Well, it's going to help everyone in their tax rates down the road, hopefully.
Sure, and everybody, you know.
It's got benefits across the board, whether you...
Well, the reason you would get a master water, Mr. Stevens can explain this much better than I, but the reason you want a master water and sewer plan is because you shouldn't be doing a job piecemeal and not considering all the other ramifications.
Sure.
So the JRWA, the Zion Crossroads Water System, the Fort Union Sanitary District, the Palmyra Sewer Plant, the water treatment needs along the Palmyra Corridor from the high school down.
Right.
All those things have to be tied together, not necessarily physically tied together, but tied together in a planning way such that you
and
can phase those things because you can't
doing.
Do anything at once. That's what
that's
the Master Water Sewer Plant will, Master Water and
Master
Sewer Plant
water.
Will address.
Right, and that'll be read and whenever.
Well, Wayne, if the contractor started this second on a master water sewer plan, would we have like a finalized product by the end of the year?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That would be 20 good.
Days to 180, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's something we can take on the road show down the road.
It is, absolutely.
It needs to be out there. I mean, people need to be excited about...
At least understand. Maybe not excited.
I don't know what's wrong with
her. She got excited.
Got excited.
No, I say people get excited.
Yeah, the intent is to use the preliminary engineering report that RKK just finished in Zion Crossroads, which is more or less a master water and sewer plan for that area as a jumping off point for going to the other CPAs.
But on your May 20th, will be an important day. On your May 20th meeting, you've got a work session that afternoon at 4:00. That's when Mr. Stevens is going to cover the Fort Union Sanitary District and the way ahead on that long term, and also an update on the Zion Crossroads water system in general, and kind of an overarching review of where we're at with all those various things. He's got some great ideas on how to handle and manage the Fort Union Sanitary District long term, but also in concert with this kind of overarching master water and sewer plan. So that work session on the 20th will be an important one to ask lots and lots of questions.
Right.
And if we can get any of that stuff to you ahead of time, we'll try to send out some of that briefing ahead of time so you can mull over for a few days before you come to the work session on the 20th.
Well, and another thing,
Will we also be getting an update on the wells, the well situation or the study on the wells?
At Zion Crossroads or the ones that carry
the just in the whole, the study that was being done about all the wells?
Well, the only study that was kicked off that was approved was the Zion Crossroads one. That's the one that was funded.
Okay. And so is that done now? Is that not done?
Well,
I will have the final report by then, but I did already...
The answer is already, but you could maybe update
I'd like to see a report for $50,000 we spent.
I've been bringing it out for some time, too.
Yeah. Exactly.
Where do we stand on that at this point?
Groundwater is not really an option for that area. I actually already reported that.
I think he's asking for the report.
It is. We're waiting on the final written report from that contractor. Yeah. But the last time Mr. Stevens briefed you, the only thing remaining was to go do some more detailed look on the property of the Department of Corrections.
Right.
And that's been underway. And so you'll have the answer for that, too. But there's nothing there particularly promising either. On the wells we thought might have been capped off, closed off, and could be reused.
Well, in fact, one of them has a building built on top of it. It was, until we got maps from the health department exactly where the stuff was on site, we weren't even sure where the three wells were. No, well, they pretty sure they abandoned it before they did. Well, I would hope they did, but the other wells were very, very low volume. So,
Thank you.
Now, and on that hydrogeologic study, the next thing that I think Mr. Stevens originally looked for was then move down more towards Palmyra, Carysbrook area was it kind of the next study.
If we had found some potential sites in Zion Crossroads, my next step would have been to recommend that we drill a few test wells, but the results don't even look like it's going to be worth doing that. We need probably just do a similar high-level study for phase one in other areas and see what potential we have there, and then basically utilize the potential wherever we have it.
Although based on some of the recent information we gave you about other potential wells, we may have some solutions for those anyway. We'll have to talk about that later. But but Zion Crossroads specifically not positive, and that's what the report will say when you get it.
Okay. I know we're going to break in a little bit, but being an educator, and I see the students who come and sit here, and I think the more knowledge, and these are 12th graders, I think, but I don't see the connection between when they come in. Some way, the teachers should have our agenda. Those kids should come in knowing what they are listening to. And if the teacher is not here with them, I don't know how they do a follow-up with these kids. Because students go home and talk about things. We've got 200 and some students who could be in here listening to things. I think we need to make a connection with Gina on why they're here, what are they getting from it, because if there's a purpose, then it has to be, it should have some kind of result just coming.
But that should come from the school.
Yeah,
I know that. I understand that perfectly. But I need to.
I'd like not to take on one more task, but I'll do whatever you want.
There's only one teacher that requires it, and that's Mr. Pace, the one gentleman who was here sitting over there the last meeting. Yeah. He's the only teacher that requires his kids to come to a board meeting, both school and
supervisors. He's the only one, right?
He's the only one.
So everybody is not, okay. That answers my question. I mean, that answers some of my concerns.
I mean,
because this is an opportunity for children to learn.
The agenda's available. He's got to publish it. And he knows.
I'm sure he's getting on it. I'm sure he's listening to the tapes.
Right. I mean, it's readily available ahead of time, so you can have that. But we'll gladly coordinate with anybody if you've got questions on that, because it is important for them to kind of
understand. He teaches the AP government class, and he's the only one required.
Important.
Now, there was a lady a couple years ago that had inquiries, but then she never followed up on the teachers from the high school.
Yes, Mr. Smith, do you have something?
She no longer does it.
Okay.
This is an older lady.
Mrs. Smith, you got something on your iPhone?
Yeah, so just put it in perspective, the property that was sold on 5th Street Extended, where Wegmans is going, was just recently closed for about $32,000 an acre.
Oh.
So just to put it in perspective versus that there.
Okay. Yeah.
Sounds like
okay.
We definitely should do some sort of a market assessment in general so that folks have a realistic idea of what to price their land. As we try, obviously they can put anything they want to out there, but just kind of if we're helping people to try to move from phase one to phase three, I think the better they understand what the area might support, the more likely it is.
What kind of value will they add?
Yeah, what is realistic, and what investments are you going to make, and how do you start to parcel those out?
Yeah, I'm not because every time I see somebody, a friend of mine asks me, when are y'all going to do some of our land up there?
I'm not sure, because I'm just not sure.
is that a job of, is that something you want staff working on, or is that something we coordinate with?
I just don't know because I'm not familiar with it.
Well, I think that what Mr. Smith was saying, he would volunteer to help us do that.
Well, you can't. We have to be a little careful with that too, because if we open up and say we'll take a developer to volunteer to do this, you've got to kind of open it to everybody.
Yeah.
Only because of the procurement requirements.
Right.
But if you offer this to developers to assist the county and get kind of a work group together, then that would be dandy. Right. But we'll head in whatever direction we want. I'm trying to figure out.
Well, maybe just a work session on you know, as part of our.
Yeah.
It sounds like we probably could benefit from a work session slash invite other folks in to talk about, you know, how do we actually move these properties to different.
We might be able to do a chamber type sponsored thing at Zion Crossroads that we invite anybody that's along there, along the corridor, or anybody else, and developers to come in so we can kind of have an open forum about stuff, talk about site readiness studies, talk about what the market looks like now, and have various different developers or real estate folks give some impression. We could host that, and I think you could get a lot of synergy out of it.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a great start.
Okay, I think it's time we're going into closed session. Well, so,
let me just show you a couple things since you got a minute or two. Okay or no?
That's fine. Go ahead. You said a couple seconds. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Gone.
Minutes.
Never mind.
Huh?
Okay, never mind.
We can do
you
it.
You sure?
Yeah, it's okay.
All right.
I see too many nodding looks that don't want to pay attention. So
you know that you all have. You've lost.
I'm glad to hear from you.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, a couple things. Let me just give you some updates. We don't get enough time to actually keep you informed of all the stuff.
That's true.
Some of the things that I want you to just be aware of.
Yes.
We're doing some updates to the website on various things to make it two-click ready. Anytime you have to click more than twice to get to what you want, it's too deep. Mm-hmm. And so we've done a bunch of those things. But even some of the front page things. You know, Jonathan's got the annual report to citizens click right there where anybody can get to that anytime, and the link's available. The market for the banner winners, that brief that shows all the, you know, the kids' pictures and the things they did,
right,
is out there for citizens to be able to get to. Jonathan's added the Twitter link up there. I've just worked with Jason Smith today to create the county Facebook webpage that we don't necessarily have to put a lot on, because the tweets that I send out every week will automatically go to that. I didn't realize that till the other day. And then the Parks and Rec things they do can go to one consolidated site. So you've got one more way to communicate with the community that doesn't cost us anything, if that's the way they learn. The senior resources things now go directly to that senior resource guide where you can get to the one that you see in the printed copy of that, the senior resource guide. So there's a lot of updates like this where these things have been put on the website. One of the reasons I'm showing this is I want you to encourage people to use this as a landing site for them, because there's a lot of ways to make this the landing site in Savannah, and we want to make it as useful as possible. Everybody's got 1,000 million websites that they can get access to, but if you want to know something about Savannah, we want to make sure it's readily available there. If you think of something or you hear from a citizen that said, you know, I was trying to find such and such, absolutely let us know, because I know where to find stuff on it. You ask me a question, I can point right to it because I play with this a lot and I'm aware of what goes on there. But if it's hard for a citizen to find something, then it's in the wrong place. And we want to make it as easy as possible. Fan mail has been growing by leaps and bounds. What we're going to do now, between Ms. Belanger Harris and Mr. Ms. McMahon, they're going to be adding an ability on there when you put your email to sign up for fan mail, you can select the things you want to get or the things you don't want to get. Because right now, if you get fan mail, you also get the notification of the minutes and the notification of action reports, but there'll be a couple other options too. Parks and Rec news, updates like that, emergency information.
Yeah.
Those will make it a little easier for people to get information in the way they use best. I'm an email hound. I don't use Facebook. I don't really play with Twitter other than for stuff I send out from the county. I'm an email hound. So when something gets pushed to me by email, it's much better for me and much easier. Mr. Sheridan likes getting text messages. Much easier for him. Every one of us has a different way that we get our information and a different way we learn. But if it's important enough for the county to want to tell people, we need to be able to do it in 3 or 4 or 5 different ways so it gets to that individual's learning style.
a mom, a dad with three young kids hears information and follows information completely different than a grandfather like me. I'm in a different world. So when you hear from citizens, or you can't find something, or you wonder about it, or the notes we take from these meetings, we use that to update this, and we want you to help us with that too. Whether it's something you want sent on Facebook more often, or on Twitter, or if there's another learning method you use, let us know so we can connect the dots.
This website should be in our business department, exposed to every kid who comes through that to know how to use that website. I wish we had some more computers down at the senior center for those elderly people to get on there, and someone could go, they would have a ball to open up their minds and let them know that you are not, because you're 80, 70, whatever, you can still sit there and just find out what's going on in the county, get there twice a week, two or three of them could sit down, somebody could manipulate it, you know.
Well, we certainly have a variety of older computers that can be used for that purpose. Yes. What I'm worried about is bandwidth, so we'll check with Mr. McMahon and find out what's possible. But there's not much reason why we can't incorporate them into the part of the classes or things that go there, or when we have seniors there, the various senior centers, mm-hmm. if we've got access, even if there's not internet access, we can still do some computer sure. things. But if there is internet access, right. then we can certainly do some of the basic things that people might be interested in.
What about some of those used computers from the school system that they have and we're replacing?
Yeah,
is there anything there?
Well, the school system gets some credit and trade in those, but we have plenty of excess used computers here okay. at the county as we upgrade and change, that we can transfer into those areas if they're still good enough to be used. And I know we've got this laptop, for instance, is not too far off from being replaced, but still would be good enough to use for many purposes, mm-hmm. and we can use it or a desktop in the same way. So we won't necessarily have to buy new computers. It's the access to bandwidth for internet access that is of concern. Fort Kenyon Community Center doesn't have the same bandwidth and access that we have here, or the same as the schools right. have, just because of the connections that are different. Yeah. But we'll definitely look at that and see.
Okay, so now you're all straight. We can have you finish, Mr.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Are we ready?
Yes, sir. We're ready.
Madam Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A.3, Section 2.2-3711A.6. of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, real estate, and investment of funds.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then we will go into closed session dinner and reconvene at 7 o'clock.
Yes, ma'am.
Sure can.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Board of Supervisors
meeting. I have to make this
meeting, yeah. And we have a motion. We've just been in closed session. We have to have a motion to go in open session. Mr. Weaver?
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 is amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting, and a second and a recorded vote needed.
All right, I need a second.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. Ullenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. One person is absent. Okay, individually.
Recording.
Aye. Okay, Weaver. And chair aye. Okay. Now we can go into our regular 7 o'clock meeting, and we'd like for you to stand and say the pledge with us, and then a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. have seen the agenda. I need for to have a motion to adopt the agenda, or if you want to change anything, add anything.
Motion made.
Okay.
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. Ullenbrook and second by Mr. Weaver that the agenda can stand as it is. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and the chair votes aye. We have one board member missing.
Madam Chairman, could I just note for the record that the missing member is Mr. Sheridan. He hasn't rejoined the rest
of the
board yet.
All right, great. Thank you. Now we will have County Administrator's report.
Yes, ma'am. Just a few items to cover. Some good news as always. Oh, it's birthday time.
Oh, so, dear.
Happy birthday to Mr. Weaver and Mr. Bryan this month.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they're going to bring cake to the next meeting. But
have you already had it?
No. I forgot about it.
Both of them are coming up.
I'm younger than he is.
Do you remember?
He's going to be beyond the big number.
I can't remember.
Is it recorded anywhere?
In the stone tablet.
I don't know where to look.
All right. Well, happy birthday.
Right next to Moses' birthday.
Anyway, happy birthday to both of you. I just want to show you this picture. I think that's an amazing photo. At about 6:30 in the morning at Pleasant Grove Park, Claire Lawan, who works in our Parks and Rec choir.
It's on magic brain.
That's the best bathroom picture I've ever
that's
seen.
$150,000
bathroom.
Yeah.
That should be on a postcard.
Honestly, it is beautiful, and it was the morning of the Easter egg hunt for the kids. That's what it looked like that morning coming up. So,
even though the faucets don't work,
and we're selling these for $15 a piece. So.
The porta potty's right behind it; it's hiding.
Beautiful.
No, they work. They work that day. The kids love it.
They work that day.
They're the moms and dads.
That's great.
They better get a lot of use out of it. $100,000.
We should put $150,000.
We should put those quarter slots in.
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
The state financial audit of the circuit court was completed recently. They did the period April through December and no findings, which is great. Mm-hmm. The Parks and Rec guide, you've seen the new guide that's out and the new Parks and Rec logo that they use on there, but the guide now costs $1,200 per publication instead of $18. They found a vendor that provided a better price for us off contract, and so we switched to that. That's good news for us. The Lake Monticello Red Hat Society, of which my wife is a member, I think, recently donated a large stock of newborn essentials that really helped social services serve our community. And so we really appreciate their taking time to support our families.
That's great.
You can't be in the Red Hat Society.
No, I was just wondering what they donated.
You're old enough.
He's in the Red Society, though.
He was thinking about the National Lions.
I'm going to end up in the Defense Society pretty soon. Talk about essentials.
Young people, please ignore those comments.
You got away from one. I wouldn't try it a second time. Bremo Park, unfortunately, is closed. Dominion Power is dredging those ash ponds that are down there, and it may be closed through most of the rest of the year. We don't know yet, and we won't be doing a maintenance or mowing at all. But the ash ponds will take at least until fall, but it may take a full year for them to finish that project up. So the Bremo Park is closed down for some time. We didn't know this was coming, but now we know because it's closed. So. The new trailer that you had authorized a while back for the Bobcat's actually here, so now we have something legal to haul the Bobcat around on and something that's not broken. It's great to have the new trailer on board. And then the Office of Comprehensive Services, we got some good news yesterday, or day before yesterday, when Jackie Meyer bounced into my office and jumped up and down about
that's
50
great.
Times. The initial $665,000 that they talked about as potential repayments like they do in all these audits really was only $378,000. Because that's the state share, but the aggressive approach that we had in doing quality improvement plans and putting new programs in place in the meeting with the state, that repayment's been waived, and they'll come back and just do their regular follow-up re-inspection within 12 to 18 months. And so congratulations to all the folks that worked on that. And what the audits do is help strengthen our programs, and that's what we want them to come in for, but fortunately there won't be any dollars tied to it, we expect. That's a budget
that's
hit we don't need. The FRA was originally going to come back for the May 6th meeting to kind of talk about their recommendations going forward. There is no strong consensus yet about what way. There's still three or four options out there with three or four votes for each option. They're not, most members are not particularly easily available for the May 6th meeting, you had said you didn't want to do an evening meeting, so I put them on the unfinished business at the end, so it would be later, you know, like 6 o'clock, and most members are not particularly thrilled about that. So these are the four options that I know of. Cheryl sent these off to the members to let them decide on it too. And the ones that got the most votes, and there's no consensus here, but the ones that got the most are these first two, are these two in the middle. But I need to know direction from the board on what you want me to do.
I'd like to be here for that one. So
yes.
Yeah,
okay. Well, the June 3rd and June 17th, you would be. The May 6th one, you can certainly do that, but they weren't particularly thrilled about the May 6th time.
I think we need to accommodate them and do that when they can be here.
Either of those 2 days is good.
So do you would prefer doing a 4 o'clock? While some of the people...
Let's do 7.
It's unusual because most people on Monday night, Ms. Wilkins said, did not want to do a 4 o'clock meeting because it's not convenient for them. Makes sense. But when they sent the votes in, and people voted on this, half said the 4 o'clock meeting and half said 7 o'clock meeting. So
part of this, I think the public, that's an interest item, so 7 p.m.
Well, I think that's much better if you do a work session at 7 p.m.
Yeah,
because then you can do it. The tables are across from you, it works out better.
The public can get there then, too.
Mr. Sheridan, what do you think?
I agree with 7 o'clock.
Okay, so we'll plan it for the June 3rd meeting, 7 o'clock work session.
Yes, sounds good.
That will be helpful because then you'll have some time to talk, go through all the options and alternatives, and hopefully get FRA to decide the way ahead. That's what we really would hope for. The potential sign ordinance review, we'll take that on and put that on there. The Central Virginia Jail budget update. Last week, the authority revoted on another motion for the fiscal year 16 budget. The budget was adopted as one that had been worked on by the committee, a lower version that was adopted the month before. The dollar that was approved for Favanna's share is what is in your budget. So there's no change to your budget. That's the new budget that was adopted by the jail authority. So that's what's in your budget, and you'll see that document tonight, but that's what's in there. And I'm going on post-budget celebration bliss next week, and Bobby Popowitz will be covering while I'm gone, and I'll be available by email and phone. But any questions I can answer for the board? And that's outside your building right here last week.
That's beautiful. Or have a nice vacation.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Okay.
So remember, your next regular meeting, 4 o'clock, May 6th, no work session that day.
All right, Board of Supervisors updates. Anyone would like to tell us any meetings you have attended since our last meeting?
Since last week.
Yeah.
I went to the model airplane display and flying of the planes down there on Route 6.
Across from me.
Yes, across from you. And as you know, we have a contract with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been sort of interested in that. It's great for young people and adults. It's a great hobby. And the thing that I found interesting, they had a quad plane. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's four propellers.
It's a great drone.
So they were down there displaying that, and I observed that. That's about the size of it. Very interesting.
Yes, very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Different kind of
thank
quad.
Thank you. Drone. Anyone Talk else? Back.
No, just the jail authority, thank goodness Mr. Nichols was there.
It wasn't me. It's just that we had enough votes this time.
And
I'd like to commend Bob for the job that he's really done on this jail board. He's brought down several $100,000 in our benefit, and he's a consistent player in this game, and so I think we owe him a commendable whatever.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
I somehow became a lightning rod there, too.
So no.
I don't know how that falls me.
But it's good to actually put some rigor to the process, because
yes,
it wasn't.
Put fear in their hearts. They listen to you. Thank you. Thank you, Bob, for your work on the jail board.
Thank you,
Mr. Weaver, for letting us recognize that. Anyone else? Okay. Tomorrow evening, I'm doing the Jobber President's Volunteer Program, where I'm practicing reading all of these people's names, which are very different. Some of them are very difficult.
Well, I'll be there watching, so you better read them right.
Are you going to be there?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, no.
I'm taking notes, too.
Oh, dear. I'm going to really have to practice tonight
video, okay.
And make sure I'm not messing up people's names. Okay, anything else? If not, I would like to open the first public comments. You may come to the mic and give your name and address. We do have a public hearing this afternoon, so if you want to speak on the public hearing, I'd like you to wait until we announce that. Otherwise, anything else you would like to speak on, please come to the mic, and then you have 5 minutes to do so. Do we have anyone?
Hit the gap.
All right. If not, I will close the first public comments, and I'm not paying attention to Mr. Oliver.
The gavel can also be in your left hand.
Oh, yes. I try not to put it in that hand.
Be nice. Don't want me storming out of here.
I don't want to do that.
Stay away from comments.
All right. Now we have our public hearing. It's ZMT 14-05, Lake Monticello, Volunteer Fire Department and Rescue Squad. Our senior planner, Mr. Steve Tugler.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is a rezoning request from the Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department, ZMP 1405. And they're requesting rezoning from A1 to R4 with conditions. And it's a 6.134-acre parcel of tax map 18, section A, parcel 38F, again from A1 agricultural to R4. The applicant has submitted a draft proffer statement, and they are stating that single-family detached, single-family attached, and townhouse dwellings shall not be permitted by right or by special use permit on this property. The proposed use is auxiliary space for the existing firehouse and the rescue department. This parcel is located within the Ravana Community Planning Area, and there was a family subdivision that was created back in 2010 for one of the parcels. This is a copy of the draft proffer statement. It's received on February 3rd. Okay, so this is the parcel, this is the zoning map. The delineation of the parcel is shown here in the bold lines here. The existing firehouse and facility is on this parcel, currently zoned R4. Aerial photography shows the existing facility and then the adjacent parcel up for rezoning tonight. This is the applicant's rendering. It shows the existing site and subject parcel. Again, the existing buildings are on the corner of Slice and South Boston. And the proposed rezoning parcel, subject parcel, is here, a little over 6 acres. These are the proposed improvements. There is the boundary, the parcel boundary line between the two. The proposed building is shown on that boundary line. The boundary line would be vacated to remove any conflict of interest with regard to building setbacks. A few photographs for the board. This is the boundary between the existing site and looking, I believe, looking south. This is adjacent to a single-family dwelling at the lake. And, of course, along South Boston Road, and our public notice sign is shown there in the foreground. So, again, there is a request for conditional rezoning for 6-acre parcels in the Cunningham Election District. If the rezoning is approved, any site improvements would require a site development plan that would be reviewed administratively through the planning office. And consistent with the comprehensive plan, medium, small commercial businesses along with office, civic, residential uses all combine to form a series of new traditional development that are interconnected with the surrounding developments. Surrounding growth should be a mixture of uses, residential dwelling types that serve a variety of incomes. Neighborhood mixed use is needed to help offset this volume. The majority of the Lake Monticello area is currently zoned R4. In conclusion, the rezoning request appears to be in conformance with our comprehensive plan. The board should consider how the request does or doesn't align with the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. And back at the March 25th Planning Commission meeting, there was some discussion with regard to screening between the adjacent residential. There's the house that fronts on Slice, and then there's two other additional single-family dwellings that front on 600 South Boston. And so any improvements that are made to this site would require screening. And motion is on your screen here, and the applicants are present if you have any questions. I'll be happy to answer any questions to you if you have any.
Madam Chairman, I think there was an error. It was an error in the Planning Commission motion, Planning Commission recommendation. Dr. Babbitt's not on the commission. That was a mistake. It's supposed to be Mr. Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
The vote was correct.
Right, okay.
It's just a typo.
The vote was correct.
The identity of the man.
Okay, do you have any questions for Mr. Tugwell? Okay. Do you have any questions for the captain? Would you like for them to come to the mic for anything? No? Thank you, Mr. Tugwell. I will now open for the public hearing. If we have any citizens who would like to address the board concerning this project, please come to the mic, give your name, address. Hi, Ms. Deidre.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Hi, my name is Deidre McCauley, and I live at 861 South Boston Road. The parcel that we're talking about was given to Elwood Tyler, who's my first cousin. It was given to him by my mom. So
use the pointer right here if you like, ma'am.
Oh Lord, I don't think you want me. Good, that's okay. That I was like, I don't think you want me to do that. All right, let's push this thing right here. All right, there we go. Okay, so this house right here, that's my cousin Bronson Gale. This right here, my uncle Jake, who's my great uncle, he's passed away. My cousins live there now. She just did a whole bunch of work to that house, new siding and new windows. That's my sister and my brother-in-law, right there. And then if you'll see, the rest of that is, that's all my mama, right there. I was at the hearings that were held, and I have spent a lot of time looking at zoning and the county and civic uses and sections and subsections and... what I would say is that there are under A1, they can do what they want to do as a civic entity. And the only difference is, and I would really suggest if you have an opportunity to really look at this, it's on Fluvanna's webpage, between A1 and R4, the majority of things that are by right in R4 that are not covered under A1 or by a special use permit under A1 are a lot of things that fall under commercial. And what I would say to you is that, you know, I understand that we hear a lot about that this is in a growth area or whatever you want to call it. What I would say to you is that I don't think anybody asked for any of our feedback in that when the county was talking about this. You know, we live in houses. We raise our kids. I've got a 7-year-old daughter right there. We grew up running through those woods, and I still do at 50. And, you know, to throw another parking lot in there, or much worse, because don't forget that R4, if they don't have the financing yet, and say that deal doesn't happen, that R4 doesn't go with them. That R4 goes with that piece of land. So say it doesn't happen. So let's pick out one of the other things that can happen there. So then it becomes an auction house or an automobile repair establishment, because those are things that can happen there. Nothing you can do about it, because guess what? Those weren't proffered out. And it's by right. So I think that we've really got to sometimes just stop and think. And I understand that they bought the property, but it's not the county's responsibility to create something for somebody just because they bought a piece of property. It's not. It's the county's responsibility to really think about the things that we do. and think about what's really right for our communities. And, you know, the fire department does a great job. This isn't about the fire department. This is about giving a piece of land that sits in the middle of a bunch of houses, R4, and all the ramifications of this huge laundry list of everything I have highlighted in orange on these piece of papers, mostly commercial stuff, that can happen, because it's not about the fire department. It's about giving that parcel of land an R4 zoning. And I ask you, I beg you, don't do it. What they want to do can happen under A1. Section 17, 22.17, says it can. Gives a lot of outs for fire departments, police departments. So it's something to really think about. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Did the Planning Commission have anything to say about this, per se?
Well, they said that they were going to do some studying and thinking on it, and I guess that studying and thinking didn't happen. So that's what I have to say on that one.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak?
No.
Yes. He can't speak.
Well, he's an applicant. You just have to
do that. He's an applicant, Mr.
The applicant's entitled to speak.
No, they just went past. I didn't know.
Can he, Mr. Bowes?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
He's entitled to speak. As the applicant, he's a citizen.
Okay.
Just to relay some of the fears, the Lake Monticello Fire Department bought that property, invested $100,000 to acquire it. We've already contracted with an engineer, obviously, who's done the site plans. We've also contracted with an engineer to design, an architect to design the building. We are committed to go forward with this. We asked for the rezoning because it's our intention in the summer to actually start moving in on and working on that parking lot. It is not our intention to sell that for someone else to do something else with the property. We vitally need that. We have no other place to expand. And as far as can we do this under A1, I would let our engineer speak to that issue, if it's okay with the board. Thank you.
Okay, it's okay with the board. Mr. Shimp?
Yes, I'm Justin Shimp. I'm the engineer for the project. A few things to clarify. You know, this, R4 does not allow any commercial sort of uses. It's quite limited. And the residential uses that are allowed, of the four of them, we've restricted three of them that we won't do. So, for example, with the proffers as proposed, the fire department could not sell off a portion of this land to be used for townhomes or single-family homes. That would be restricted for whoever owns the land from here on in to eternity until the Board of Supervisors would authorize that to be different. So there's no auction houses aren't allowed, auto repairs aren't allowed. That's a commercial. This is a residential zone. So the primary issue with the zoning really is actually one of setbacks, not even uses. So the setbacks for A1 are just a lot different than that of R4. It's like 75 feet versus 20. And so that impacts the potential for the building we have. And further, we have a situation where the building addition, again, already started designing and are ready to move forward with, it was over the property line. And you really don't want your building in one zone, in one part of the building, in one zone in the other. It's just bad practice. And we talked to the zoning administrator about that, and the Planning Commission dealt with that too and felt that overall that was an acceptable, that R4 was appropriate for this rather than having the building split over two different zoning districts. And there's really no change to anybody here other than the setbacks, really. But things like the screening, lighting requirements, the parking lot are the same whether you're in A1 or in R4. So those are no different in the zoning. It's really purely a matter of setbacks and having two parcels that are owned by the fire department that are the same zone and not subject to one changing at one point and the other not changing, which would create a problem for them down the road to be zoning violations or things like that. So just trying to make a simple plan that fits good zoning practice for what we've done. Should be no fear of any automobile repair yards or anything like that. And for this R4, what we proposed. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer those too while I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Anyone else like to address the board? We have to close the public hearing first. Okay. Can he ask questions?
If you have a question of Mr. Champ.
I was just going to ask, how much property is left over beyond parking?
It must be about, there's a picture you can see. It
probably comes to about here?
We're using a little less than half.
So it would be three acres.
3 acres and change left over.
It would be R4 that would be open.
That's right.
Okay, I need to close the public hearing.
If there's nobody else who wants to speak.
Is there no other intended use for the remaining portion of the land?
That's my question.
Well, I don't think they have one at the moment, but they recognize that they're a long-term institution, and there really is no other place for them to go but that direction. So, you know, 20 years from now, there will certainly be need for addition, we think, but we don't know what that is yet, but we know that we're pinned in all sides except that one. That's why it was important to acquire that land, so they could expand the same site.
But the decision-making as to any other additions on that property are strictly part of the fire, the Lake Machala Fire Rescue Department, correct?
Well, subject to the property, of course.
Subject to the property.
Right.
Because the property covers all the property.
Three of four were taken care of in the property. What's the fourth one?
The fourth one would be a multifamily sort of use. So it's residential.
And why was that not proffered up?
There's a thought that over time that having an ability to have some separate housing for volunteers would be an attractive way to help build the staff there, I think, was the thought. There was not certainly there's no intention or thought of the fire department, you know, making that as a for-profit kind of operation, but that to help attract people in the future, you could have essentially some small limited housing on the site. Say, hey, if you volunteer here, you have an opportunity to have reduced rent here, or something like that, as part of the program.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sharon, if there's no more questions. Do we have anyone else who would like to address the board? Yes, Ms. Towne.
I'm not gonna do a lot of talking because I've got a terrible allergy problem.
Could you give your name and address?
All right. My name is Gwen Townsend. I live at 959 South Boston Road. And I just want to read this. Section 22-17-17, public safety buildings exempt from certain requirements, except as otherwise expressly provided herein after, any building used exclusively for the provision of public safety services shall be exempt from the acreage, frontage, setback, and yard requirements of this ordinance. The foregoing notwithstanding, reasonable acreage, frontage, setbacks, and yards may be required by the county in the view of a site plan in any case in which it shall be determined that particular requirements relating to acreage, frontage, setbacks, and yards are necessary to protect the public safety. For purposes of this section, the term public safety services shall be deemed to include the sheriff of the county, the Virginia State Police, and any other agency established under the laws of the Commonwealth and certified by the sheriff as providing public police services within the county, and fire and or emergency medical services companies and departments as defined in Virginia Code Section 27-8.1. And this is in reference to his statement about the setbacks.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Brown. Anyone else would like to address the board? If not, I will close the public hearing and have a discussion with the Board of Supervisors.
Madam Chairman, can I make a couple of comments about this issue? I'm not sure where Mrs. McCauley was reading, but the uses she was describing, and I can't recite all of them, but I remember her saying something about an automobile repair facility. That's not permitted in R4. It's permitted in B1. And it may be that I've done this by myself, so it may be that she did it. She flipped over the page and was reading from the B1 district instead of the R4. But that's not permitted in R4.
There are certain commercial uses that are permitted in R4, notably home occupations, and there are some other things, but they're not commercial. There are commercial uses and other kinds of uses, but they require a special use permit. So, for example, assisted living facilities, campgrounds, daycare centers, lodges, commercial marinas, adult retirement communities, medical clinics, a number of others, restaurants, retail stores, those are all permitted, but they're permitted only with special use permit. The uses permitted by right are conservation areas, public parks and recreational areas, public uses, home occupations, accessory uses, cluster developments, greenhouses, non-commercial, private kennels, private non-commercial marinas, minor utilities, and then the residential uses, including a group home. So those are the only ones that are permitted by right.
In R4?
In R4, that's right.
So you'd have a dog kennel there?
A private dog kennel.
Private dog kennel.
Not a commercial
kennel. Right.
And private kennels are also permitted in A1, so mm-hmm. it wouldn't make any difference. In the A1, the uses permitted are, and I'll skip some of the obvious ones like agriculture and things, public parks and recreational areas, public uses, family daycare homes, home occupations, temporary sawmills, cemeteries, non-commercial, greenhouses, non-commercial, kennels, private, marinas, private, non-commercial, rural cluster developments, private recreational shooting facilities, minor utilities, wood storage, and then various kinds of residential uses, including mobile homes. Those are permitted by right in the A1. In terms of the use that was just the section that was just cited about the
setbacks.
Mrs.
Townsend.
Townsend was saying there is a provision relating to that does relate to this kind of emergency facility, and it would include. Things like the fire company and the rescue squad, those relate to setbacks and things like that. The problem really is not setbacks so much as the compatibility of the two zones, and there are some fairly sophisticated and I think somewhat counterintuitive or non-intuitive things that relate to the uses that can be put on two different districts, and there are some differences. So I think it is not the case that 22.17.17 would exempt the development of this property for these emergency uses. It relates to things like setbacks and yards and frontage and an acreage. It would do that. It wouldn't change the uses that are permitted. So I think it's better practice, frankly, to have a property like this, which is a relatively small and relatively, it's in a, clearly in a growth area. It'd be better practice to have the whole thing zoned the same way if both parcels are used for the same use. I won't say it's impossible to do it the other way, but I think it's not better practice. So if you have any questions about the zoning, I'll be glad to try to address them for you.
Can the zoning be made conditional on the ownership of the...
No.
No?
Okay. Any other questions or discussions on this? 6 acres.
There's no way we can limit what they do on the other 3 acres.
You have limited. The proffer relates to the entire property.
Okay.
When I say you have, you will have if you approve this rezoning subject to the proffer, because the proffers relate to the entire property, not just to the property that they're developing immediately.
Okay. Any other discussion? Questions?
Does the fire department have any intention of moving in the next 20 years?
Not unless the lake moves, probably.
That would be...
If the dam breaks the lake.
That's a question on which you're really not entitled to rely. You're entitled to ask the question.
Sure, no, sure, I realize.
It's purely informational.
Sure, no, it's just a question, that's all.
If they say no and change their mind tomorrow, you can't hold that against them.
Right, I'm just... But if they said they were planning on doing it, that...
Understood.
Okay, anything else? Any other discussion? If not, are you ready for anyone to make a motion? There's a motion on the screen. You can either approve, deny, defer. Someone. You have three choices.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve ZMP 1405 of the attached ordinance for ZMP 1405, a request to amend the Savannah County zoning map with respect to approximately 6.134 acres of tax map 18, section A, parcel 38F, to conditionally rezone the same from A1 agricultural general to R4 limited, subject to the submitted draft proffer.
Do we have a second? Motion died.
Well, it's too late to discuss that.
No, we can reopen it.
I mean, my only question is having the multi-level housing. That's my biggest question about it.
No, you can request it be proffered out, can't you?
No.
Not now, you can.
No. Proffer has to be made before a public hearing, before the Board of Supervisors. You can't solicit it. It has to be voluntary and part of the applicant.
I mean, is there a situation where the fire department would, I mean, I guess there's no control over the fact that they could use it for their own commercial purposes?
They could. Now, you understand, with let's call it 3 acres that this is located on. The maximum density is pretty low in our R4 district. And so you're not talking about putting up a high-rise apartment building or something. You're talking about a small number of units.
What is the maximum density for R4?
Mr. Stewart can answer that question.
I think it's 16 or something.
We
called the motion.
More like, no, there's no motion. The motion is on the floor. It has not been seconded. It's been a question.
The 2.9 dwelling units per acre.
Call it 3. So the maximum number of units would be more or less 9.
9 units.
More or less.
9 in a multifamily configuration.
And that's without an SUP. That's approved.
Sure. So, I mean, if you have...
There is no design. It's got to be in your head right now.
If you have 15 rescue personnel or whatever that need a place... I think that's what they're looking at.
No, I don't think so, because that's what I thought initially. That's not what Mr. Shimpley or Mr. Bozer was talking about.
It's homes.
What you typically have with an emergency facility like this is you have bunk rooms.
Where people can stay.
Yeah. I do not consider those to be apartments.
Right.
I consider those to be accessory to the fire company or the rescue squad, whichever.
Is that
it is.
What they're referring to? Yes. The bunk rooms?
He said the potential for rent. No,
that's not what I understood him to say. No. What I understood him to say was that
volunteers.
They would consider the option of renting apartments to volunteers in consideration of their
can
service.
We make that part
that's
of
what
the
I just. That's what I just said. So but, they're but, renting. It's not bunk rooms, they're renting apartments.
But not townhomes, not single family, single family detached.
But let me make clear what I'm trying to get across. I had initially thought that they were concerned to have multifamily as a use so that they could put in the bunk rooms. In my opinion, the bunk rooms are accessory uses to the main use of the emergency facilities. They are not residential units. They don't meet the definition of a residential unit.
But that could change once this is approved.
Now, Mr. Holbrook, you're not understanding me. The point is, if they build bunk rooms, that is not multifamily dwellings. They do not need to have multifamily dwellings to permit that. What I understood Mr. Boza to say was that they wanted to have the option of potentially building multifamily structure
right.
and using that as, if you will, as a recruiting tool. So we'll let you have we'll let you live in this apartment if you come and be a member of the club company. Maybe I misunderstood him, but that's what I understood him to say.
Yes.
Now, if they did that and somebody fell out of standing as a volunteer, would they be able to evict them? I know there's certain rules on renting.
Not necessarily. The point is if these are leased to, if you will, employees. I know they're volunteers,
right.
but they're ineffective employees, and as a condition of their occupancy, they have to remain employees. This is way beyond the scope of this discussion because all this is dependent on how they would actually do it. I mean, in theory, what they could do is they could build a small multifamily building on the rest of this property. Now, they'd have to have site plan and all this kind of thing. So, but yes, I think they could do that. But that would not involve the bunk rooms because, in my opinion, the bunk rooms are not dwelling units.
Well, the rooms are inside the building.
It doesn't matter where they are.
Wouldn't matter.
As long as they're bunk rooms, they do not have kitchen and separate kitchen and sanitary facilities. They're just bunk rooms as part of the emergency facility.
Could Mr. Boza say anything?
Can you ask him a question? Sure. Can we call Mr. Boza back to the mic, Mr.
I think you can. Sure.
Kane. Mr. Boza, would you come and explain the multi-dominant unit you're speaking of?
Yes. This has really gotten much larger than it should be of an issue. We've sat here many times and we talk about how difficult it is to get volunteers. And we're saying what are the kind of incentives we could do to recruit volunteers. We talked about college tuition. I looked at this as the corporate president and said, well, if we have this, who knows, 20 years down the road from now, maybe we could say, you know what, we could have 5 apartments there and say, if you volunteer and you make 40% of the alums because you're going to be on property, we can give you a reduced rate on this. So I was thinking in my mind that you're taking someone possibly going to community college, starting out in the county, looking for a place to live, and we can get like a half-time non-paid worker. So I'm saying this would be a powerful recruitment tool. Do we have the money to do this now? No, but I didn't want to close the door to it as an option further down the road.
A lot cheaper than a $300,000 crew.
Exactly. And so that's what the thinking was. That was the thought process. There's no plan to do this at this point. But just as we were exploring with the board recruitment incentives to recruit volunteers, I said this is something we may be able to do ourselves if we had that property. And it looks like we bought 6 acres. We didn't need 6. We asked him to sell us half. He refused. So we're left with no point but to buy the whole parcel. So we bought the whole parcel. So now the question is, well, do you want to lock yourself out? I thought that was a viable option for the future. We're not in the business to put up commercial buildings. We're not in the business to make profit by renting out apartments. That would be, if we did that, as I said down the road, would be so we'd have someone, at least when they weren't working their day job or weren't in college, they'd be available to volunteer. And that would be a condition of their rental, that they'd have to respond, and not just occasionally, but a significant portion. So, again, we're still talking far out and hypothetical, but I just didn't want to rule it out when we talked about what we were proffering out.
Okay.
And the bunk rooms are in the fire buildings themselves.
Okay.
See? Okay, thank you.
I understand what you're saying and the good intentions of the president management, but what concerns me is we're voting on the plan, not the intentions of what folks are today.
Well, you don't know for sure
what's going to happen in 20 years. And so I don't know what's in someone's mind or who will be in charge, whether it be 10 years or 20 years down the road, because we're conveying, by one vote by this board, we're conveying the rights to the land, not to the corporation.
But it's that
manages now. And I certainly, I really wouldn't have a problem with this, but it juts in and out of
three existing properties that have been there for a long, long time, and directly affects.
Yeah, but it's also lives, so. It's also inside the CPA zone for that area. It's right across from commercial. It's right next to R4 residential. I mean, any other person buying that property would probably likely go through the planning process to have it converted to one of those uses. I would submit that it's probably in the higher interest of those neighbors to have, you know, the firehouse own it versus selling the property off for somebody else's use. Now, maybe they continue to hold it and they do it in an A1 model. I don't know. That's up to them. But it seems to me that you know, if the fire department's going to move out of that area, then somebody would take all of that property to become commercial, would be my guess, or they would convert it over to our, you know, higher density residential, being right next to the lake.
And if it stays A1, I believe you could still build structures on the remaining property.
You can. And it's not a question. It's not only a question of the structures. It's a question of what uses you can make of it. And the obvious thing you could do is you could build a single-family house on it. So
it's still A1.
The company, if it were left A1, the company could use the northern part. Use the northern part of the property, divide it, have a 2-acre lot on the southern part, sell that and build a house on. Somebody can build a house on.
And what's the maximum number of renters that can be in the house if they?
Well, it's hard to tell because it's dependent on family relationships and things, but you know, there could easily be 4, 5, 6 people.
It's a single family residence.
It would be a single family residence.
Right.
I think that we may be losing sight a little bit of the fire station. They have nowhere to expand, and that's what they're trying to do. If you go by the firehouse, you see their equipment sitting outside, and I think that's what the building that they are trying to get into is, to house that equipment, and that's it. They don't have anywhere else to expand.
Does the section exemption that was cited apply to the Lake Fire Department as a not-for-profit group?
You mean the
setback exemption?
Yes, it does, because it specifically talks about
fire and regardless. It doesn't, even though the definition of the group is slightly different.
No, it's you get it in front of me. For purposes of this section, the term public safety services shall be deemed to include the sheriff, the state police, any other police agency, and fire and or emergency medical services companies and departments. So,
They don't have to be part of the state or the
doctor. No, they do not. They specifically do not. When this section was amended, the definition with that enumeration was intended to be inclusive of all the emergency services we have.
So after the discussion that we've just had, what are the major concerns?
I would have one more question.
Okay.
So basically you're saying they can do what they want to do if it stays A1.
Well, my concern about that is that
two different parcels.
They're not necessarily two different
two
parcels.
Different
it's the two different zones that cause the problem. And I will tell you that my thinking on this is colored by one particular case from the Supreme Court. And I remember it specifically because I lost. And it dealt with the issue of what you can do on one piece of property that you access through another piece of property when they're not zoned the same. And what the Supreme Court said was that you can't do anything to serve the back property that's not permitted on the front. Now, whether that would make a difference in this case, I'm not sure my imagination's good enough to think of it. It wasn't good enough in that case, I'll tell you that.
Well, here's my question.
Can they do it? They probably can. But they're, I'm really concerned that they're likely to run into some pitfall that I haven't foreseen.
the question I have, trying to serve both groups that have spoken, but I definitely want to serve the fire and rescue squad, but we also want to take care of the citizens. If they built the parking lot in the existing building, and then you said 15, 20 years from now, you're thinking about possibly putting in the rental homes, whatever, could they come back and then ask for a rezoning where we could approve it then when you had the money and were financially ready?
Well, to do that? Could they, sure, they could do that, but and that would, that's not the concern I have. I think, and I spoke earlier that you couldn't amend the proffer. I think you can amend the proffer as long as it doesn't substantially change the nature of the proffer. And I think if, for example, they were to proffer out multifamily dwellings, I think they could do that as part of the proffer.
Could it be proffered except for the exclusive use of volunteers of the fire department?
I'd have difficulty with that.
Razor's edge.
Not if they weren't.
Yeah, because that's what I was emphasizing about the bunkhouse, because the bunkhouse is, I can't use the bunkhouse because I'm not a member of the company. A member of the company can use the bunkhouse, not because he needs a place to live, because he's not living there. He's sleeping there while he's on call or while he's during his term of duty.
Or if it's a snowstorm.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, it's a bunkhouse room is more like a mud room or an office or a storage room or something like that. It's accessory to the emergency service use itself. It's not a dwelling. And that's why I draw that distinction.
Can I ask Mr. Boza to come back up when you're done? I'm sorry, I didn't.
No, I'm done.
Can an applicant, if an applicant on any project proffers something out and the board approves that, can the applicant come back a year later, 5 years, 10 later, and
sure,
ask for the proffer to be changed?
Yes. Ask to come back and change it.
Yes, they can.
They've done that.
If it's a legal opinion that we could amend the proffer, we're willing to proffer this out right now to resolve
it. And if you got to where you could come back and y'all had the money to do it.
Right.
He can't do that now, can he?
If it doesn't substantially change.
I think he can if it doesn't substantially change the proffer.
Okay.
He can amend it. Now, it has to be done in writing, so if it's done orally on the record, that would have to be confirmed in writing.
In writing. All right.
Okay.
So I would like to amend the proffer.
So I will amend the motion based on the amendment of the proffer to exclude all R4 uses.
No, to exclude multifamily. You don't necessarily want to exclude group out homes, although I don't think it applies, and you certainly don't want to exclude accessory dwellings.
Okay. Exclude multi-tenant.
Multifamily.
Multifamily dwellings.
Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's in addition to the ones we've already proffered out
before.
Right.
I think clerk's got that. I think that needs to be confirmed in writing.
We will do that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
President.
We have a motion on the floor, but we need a second.
I'll second it.
All right. It's been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-0. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now we have action matters.
Ma'am, I'm sorry, one note on that, on your agenda. You got some line outs on there.
Case, and image.
Yeah, I had just made some error when I put it on there. They're actually combined in the ones above them. Right. So there's nothing taken off, it's just combined into one thing. So
okay. All right. Cancellation of fiscal year 15 CIP projects. Ms. Mary, our manager analysis, Twisdale.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. We discussed this last week in the public hearing. This is just a formal motion to cancel the FY16 CIP projects that are listed up there, the five projects, Pleasant Grove Restroom, Picnic Shelter.
FY15.
I'm sorry, FY15. Pleasant Grove Restroom, Picnic Shelter, Water at the Library, Flavanna County Ambulance, and County Vehicle Replacement. That totals $505,000. And we are asking to take that out of the FY15 CIP and put it back into fund balance. We are moving four of those to the CIP for FY17, the four at the bottom of the screen.
And they will be for consideration in 17. Right now, that's kind of a placeholder for that. And so this is just a formal motion to do that.
That's the whole thing?
That's the whole thing?
Mm-hmm. All right. I move the Board of Supervisors authorize staff to reappropriate $505,000 from the adopted FY15 CIP to the county's fund balance. The items are $150,000 designated for Pleasant Grove restrooms, $35,000 designated for a picnic shelter at Pleasant Grove, $45,000 designated for potable water at the Sheriff's Library Department, $175,000 designated for Savannah County Ambulance, and $100,000 designated for county vehicle replacement.
Okay.
We got to keep on going, right?
Yep.
I further move that the county administrator reassign four of the items totaling $405,000 to the FY17 CIP budget plan for future consideration. The items are $150,000 designated for the Pleasant Grove restroom, $35,000 designated for picnic shelter at Pleasant Grove, $45,000 designated for potable water at Library Sheriff's Department, and $175,000 designated for Savannah County Ambulance.
You must be a teacher.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. Allenbrook. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
You sure have a paper trail on that one, I guess.
That's why it's on your agenda.
Okay. Move right along.
Okay.
And the next one is adoption of fiscal year 2016 to fiscal year 2020. Capital Improvement Plan. Ms. Twisdale.
That's correct. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Do we need to go through the whole thing?
No.
All right. I move the resolution entitled Adoption of the FY 2016-2020 Capital Improvement Plan be adopted.
Second.
Good. All right. It's been moved by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0. The next one is adoption of the fiscal year 16 operating budget and tax rate.
We do want to show you a couple things on this.
Yes, please.
Cool.
He's sneaking something in there.
So just a quick note, we think we reminded you this last week. Remember, the pinks are just where personnel costs were, where there was a change in personnel costs. But the things that changed were the $40,000 that went into facilities budget for wastewater treatment plants from the schools, mm-hmm. and the school's budget was decremented by $40,000 because of the transfer expected on July 1st. That motion will be before you in a future meeting, but the wastewater treatment plants will transfer from school responsibility to county responsibility, and that $40,000 is the fund transfer. We also moved $2,000 out of there into facilities to support that wastewater treatment plant move. So those are the only changes on there that were from the budget that was advertised before. It's still within the same dollar values, but within there, those are things.
Could you show me?
Yes, sir.
I know it's in there, but
on the jail.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Marianne can explain this, but I'll let me find the line here. Where the heck's the jail? Oh, public facilities. Public service stores.
29.
I can't see the number. There you go. So, on here.
See, it's not a 55% increase.
A what?
Go ahead and do what you're doing.
49.7.
Here? No, that's the committee budget. The one that was adopted last Thursday in the Strongbook.
Yes, sir.
The 1.142 is the committee budget, and that's what we already had in your budget.
Now, what happens if we didn't lower the jail budget?
What we had discussed before was I recommended that leave the budget as is. If, for instance, the jail budget didn't change,
right,
then use fund balance to cover it because it would have to be in there anyway.
So this didn't reflect?
No. Well, okay. It reflected the lower amount, so you didn't have to have everything. So,
good.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
I move the resolution entitled A Resolution to Adopt the FY16 Operating Budget Set a Tax Rate and Appropriate Funds be Adopted.
Second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Allenbrook, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Can we clap?
5-0. 5-0. 5-0.
What?
Hawaii 5-0.
Hawaii 5-0.
Not there again.
All right.
Second time
in my 8 years. It's great. Okay, do we have enough?
Let's quit while we're ahead.
Do we have enough breath to move forward? And next we have a draft ordinance for VACO VML Virginia Investment Pool. Mr. Eric Dahl, our finance director.
Madam Chair, members of the board, before you is authorization to advertise a public hearing for the ordinance to authorize participation in the VACO VML Virginia Investment Pool Trust. The finance board, through their meetings, discussed different investment options, and on February 9th, the finance board decided to move forward 3-0 to move forward with this particular investment option. Because this is an ordinance, the county has to advertise 2 weeks prior to the public hearing. So before you this evening is authorization to advertise for the public hearing for this ordinance. It's a non-codified ordinance, but it's still an ordinance. Mr. Payne's office has reviewed the ordinance, and actually the ordinance and some of the accompanying documents in the package, there have been just very, very slight changes to them, and they're not substantive.
Changing to county instead of organization.
You need to understand that what you see before you is a form. It's not the final form of the ordinance.
Right.
We're waiting for your authorization before we brush it up. It'll be substantial.
But do you want any comments about it?
Oh, sure. We'll take comments.
Yeah. If you have comments.
But the point about it is, you're not going to, if you approve this tonight, you're not going to see exactly this document.
Yeah. It'll be smooth and then advertised as expected. But there are some last minute legal tweaks.
What we expect to have happen in this, because of the nature of this, it's not really a permanent ordinance of general application. We would not anticipate spreading this in the county code. On the other hand, we want to make it available and easy to find for citizens and lawyers and whatnot.
Right.
What we believe we're going to propose to you as editors of the county code is, if this is adopted, we would attach it as an exhibit, as an appendix to the county code. Mm-hmm. So it'd be easy to find, but it wouldn't be in the code itself.
Right.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a revision.
So we have some questions, Mr. Weaver.
Well, comment on page 10.
Of the ordinance, sir?
Page 10.
Of the ordinance?
Yes, on the ordinance. Mm-hmm.
No, the ordinance doesn't have 10 pages to it.
On the draft. It says on or after July the 1st, 2014. Mm-hmm. Is that supposed to be 2014 or 2015?
We have to know which document, Mr.
Agreement.
The agreement
has to be joined.
I think it's the agreement.
It has to be the agreement.
The agreement was 25 pages long.
It is.
Well, this one's page 10.
No, it's the trust agreement.
Remember paragraph 3, Mr. Weaver?
Yeah, it's
the draft agreement.
It's a draft agreement.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the agreement also is not a final document. It would have to be.
I understand that.
So page 10?
Huh?
Page 10?
Number 3.
Right.
It might very well be correct, but it looks sort of strange.
2016.
If you go down there, the year it talks about the year 2015.
Mm-hmm. I think the numbers are going to change. The dates are going to change.
Mm-hmm. So the dates need to be changed.
Yes. You have to initiate the ordinance and the accompanying agreement. But when it comes back to you for adoption, it's going to have the final numbers and final dates in it. Mm-hmm. So this is, if you will, a specimen.
It's right. A rough draft.
It's a rough draft.
But I believe that the dates there are correct because they're based on when VIP was put into place.
Yes.
So that would be
the trustees of VIPs then can do this, and then after July 1st, 2015, they can do this. Some of the language that will change there is we will not have the language chief investment officer. It'll just be treasurer, because that's
right.
Who's responsible for that in our county. But I think the July 2014 and the July 2015 maybe. Were specific dates on their end, not on our end.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On page 19, I found that interesting that it talks about one vote for every $250,000 that you're in this program. For example, if you took $10 million and you had $6 million in the 10, you have control of the votes then, per se, because you'd have one vote for every $250,000. I'm just wondering if that is...
Now, this is a meeting of the treasurers and chief investment officers.
Yeah. It's F, page 19.
Yeah. Does that mean a larger organization? They're not talking about
the more money they have in it, the more direction they can give to the Tobacco.
Yeah, and you get a right. vote. You're right. Says right. For each two.
Your statement is correct, Mr.
Yeah.
Okay. Similar to a stockholder.
So, you know, if you're Virginia okay. Beach and you got right. $50 million in, you
yeah.
More votes in terms of the direction.
So somebody could, in theory, control the vote because they have majority vote. If they had more than the other half, obviously.
It's possible.
That's what this
possible,
is.
Yeah. It's conceivable, yes.
It's conceivable,
but
right.
would, probably wouldn't happen.
Right. But, okay. it says further down, no treasurer may vote more than 20% of the total votes cast.
Right.
In that same paragraph.
Yeah, that's
no right. one treasurer. Can right. vote any more than 20%.
So then that is, so it contradicts itself in that sense.
No, it says this is this, no. but also you can't have more than 20% no matter how much you've got.
Okay.
When someone was as smart as you when they put this thing together.
Okay, anything thank else? Goodness. Mr. Go Weaver. Figure.
Okay, that's else? Fine. No, I have nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I move to approve advertisement of a public hearing for the purpose of considering the ordinance to authorize participation in the VACO. EML Virginia Investment Pool Trust Fund attached.
Second.
All right, it's actually moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Allenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
And that'll be on your May 20th evening agenda.
Okay. I need to regress a little bit. With that last motion that we made, I know that the young people in the audience didn't understand what we did. We just voted on the tax rate because they, you know, the way there it is right here.
We voted on
the budget and the tax rate. You all got that understood? Because you're here to learn.
Yeah.
And if there's any questions, please follow up.
They're going to help that young man back there in the beach shirt. He's only, oh. The other ones are.
Do you want me to
that young man in the beach shirt?
No. Okay. All right. Now we do not have any presentations, consent agenda, minutes of April the 1st, National Public Safety Telecommunication Week resolution. I love these resolutions. I'm sorry we can't read them all out loud, because they have good information in them that helps the public understand why we have these resolutions. It's talking, the telecommunication is talking about the work of the fire department, the sheriffs, their dedication, the communication people. It's really a time to celebrate what they're doing in this community. Y'all agree?
Amen. I'm going to bring some volunteer forms and pass them out.
That'd be nice.
Next meet.
Fair Housing Month talks about how you can't discriminate for housing like you used to because of race, creed, disability. And then we have Sheriff's Department Fiscal Year 15 budget transfer, and that was the animal control of $12,000. Accounts payable report February the 2015, and accounts payable report March 2015. Anyone like to pull anything?
Well, N, you want to look at N, which is the minutes of
yes.
April the 1st.
All right.
You've probably already...
Anybody else like to pull any?
And then we'll okay. move on. Bills later.
All right.
On page 2207, you go up to the motion where we're talking about, let's see, move to approve a B, C, D, and F consent agenda. Mr. Sheridan, second, passed 4-0 ice. If you notice, you have Booker, Ohlenbrock, O'Brien, Sheridan, and Weaver, nays. Then you go down, absent is Ohlenbrock. So obviously, you have a name too much. You just need to take that one out.
Thank you. Okay. Got that.
Okay, we'll go then to R.
Okay, we'll point it out.
Don't do it, Mike. Okay.
That's Mr. Ohlenbrock. Mr. Ohlenbrock is listed as having voted on the motion, and in fact, he's absent as
yes. Okay.
He's counted twice in the right. In the record.
There. Okay.
Where'd you write?
All right, what's next, Mr. Weaver?
I'm looking right now.
Okay,
Mr. Dahl is ready, sir.
Take your time.
Mr. Dahl is ready.
Mr. Weaver, sir, you have February or March?
I'm going to start off with the first one here, okay. Okay. April the 15th.
What? Are you looking at the February, April, or March?
He's looking.
I'm looking here at the date.
Subject line, February report or March report, though, sir? Up top.
This is February 2015 okay, in the okay. amount February. Of. Okay. I'm looking at that one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. February report.
February.
Sir.
February.
Okay, let's see what I have.
February 22nd, 28th.
You got this memorized, don't you?
No.
But he makes it up really fast.
I'm sort of curious on this to start off on page 1, number 37. Document service, professional service host. I'm just curious what the $13,000, what did we do on that one?
That's in connection with keeping the record in the Davenport case.
Okay. Okay, on page 8, 299, we're talking about vehicle fuel.
Yes.
On that one?
Any vehicle fuel you see in the February bill that says payable to Fluvanna County Public Schools.
Right.
There were issues in the schools running their fuel bills because the county pays the schools every month for the fuel bills. Actually, let me back up. We would pay the vendor our portion. There are issues with the bills getting to the county. So for 6 months, this February AP report reflects 6 months worth of payments. So if you see
multitude of these
yes,
bills.
Yes, like for instance, the sheriff's department had $43,000. That was six yeah. months worth of fuel bills.
The point I want to make, though, is in the school budget, what figure are they using for that total amount, because in a sense we're reimbursing them
but
back,
they paid our portion.
Yeah, but what do they put in? In other words, if their total fuel bill is $100,000 and we reimbursed them back for $10,000, actually then they only needed a budget of $90,000.
That's correct. But this year was this right here, this was out of the norm. This wasn't the usual.
No, it's not. He's not talking about that. Mr. Weaver, clearly, like in our budget,
yes.
we have an expense.
Right.
We have an offsetting revenue.
Right.
Or we pull some from fund balance because it has to balance. In the school's case, the same way, if they've got an expense of $100,000 of fuel that year, regardless of who's paying it, and then there's an offsetting revenue, then those two offset totally in the budget. So if you needed $100,000 to pay for gas, but you're getting $10,000 back, then you're only budgeting $90,000 net.
But it looks to me like it would be $110,000 because they put in the budget that they needed $100,000 for fuel, and then you're drawing $10,000 from them. Then they end up, in a sense, because you've already approved, the board has already approved that $100,000, so you're saying $110,000.
No, they had their original.
You see what I'm saying, though?
No. Not exactly. They had their original $110,000. So, in essence, say we didn't pay them back, they would go over their budget. But we are reimbursing the schools, crediting back to their expenditure line because this was something that was out of the norm.
Oh. I'm not sure they understand.
Okay, what I'm saying is, if the school, when we approve their budget, like today, and it's $100,000, they can spend $100,000 in fuel costs.
Correct.
Okay, then we have a fuel cost that we pay them back $10,000. So in a sense, not only did they get approval today, then they have another $10,000, which makes it $110,000. I'm just saying.
Oh. No. The total fuel costs that they are supposed to budget for is the total fuel costs they have to pay for.
That just the schools have to pay for.
They buy bulk fuel for the fuel farm.
Right.
And the fuel, if they buy $100,000 worth of fuel, they would budget for $100,000 worth of fuel. But those revenues that go into the budget are offset on their budget proposal and recommendation to you.
Well, I wasn't sure that that's the way it works.
Yeah, normally every month we would get a fuel bill, and say, for instance, it was Petroleum Traders.
Budget director's here, you can ask him.
Say, for instance, Petroleum Traders, and say, out of that fuel bill, they record how much fuel we use that month, and then they record actually what the price was that we paid for that fuel. So the schools would pay Petroleum Traders, say, you know, $20,000. The county would pay Petroleum Traders $20,000 also. So normally, and Mr. Breslauer is here too, if you want to ask any questions. This was just an anomaly for this fiscal year.
Because everybody has their own personal identification number.
Okay. Well, you know,
but I think we need to answer it because it's the question's unanswered. Mr. Breslauer, can you answer the question? Or on the fly, if you can't, we'll get it later. But
do you see what I'm sort of getting at on this?
As Mr. Dahl said, in the normal course of things, we get a bill for, say, $50,000 from a petroleum vendor.
Sure. But you have a budget, though.
We have a budget. When the bill comes in, we pay the portion from the schools. So what you see in our budget document is our expenditure for our fuel. The county consolidates for their various departments. We also get a fuel check from Fire Rescue Services that is paid to the vendor, not to Flavanna County Public Schools. This happened because we couldn't let the bills go for 6 months. We had some issues with our software. We've since done a major upgrade, and since we had to pay out of our operating budget, mm-hmm. this was to replenish the expenditures. Okay. Since we couldn't get the bills to the county, for the county and Fire Rescue to pay directly. We don't. Our budget says we have a $420,000 expense. That's what Flavanna County Public Schools pays for diesel and gasoline fuel for its vehicles. The county pays directly to whichever vendors, Petroleum Traders, Mansfield Fuel, PAPCO.
Yeah, right. I see that.
So they don't normally pay us. So our expense is for our fuel, and the county expends directly to them. We had a number of discussions as we were trying to figure out what to do about this because we had the software problems. We weren't able to get the bills to work out what we wanted, how we would resolve it. I know we talked to the auditors about some possible solutions. There weren't any pretty things to do. So the solution was, in this case, for us to pay the whole bill this time, which used up some of our expenditure authority, because we talked about, do we come back to the Board of Supervisors and ask for a supplemental appropriation to increase our expenditure authority, because we'll have used up some of our expenditure authority to cover the cost of the fuel for the other organizations. And our discussions with Mr. Dahl and with the auditor, we figured we'd make it work within what we needed. If it did look like it would be a problem, we'd come back later, but we don't expect it.
And then, for instance, too, if you look at the March AP report, you can see that fuel's being paid directly to, like, for instance, PAPCO on here.
This was an anomaly that we don't expect to happen again.
Right, but now, okay, for example, in this coming year's budget that we just approved, how much do you have budgeted for fuel there?
Only their fuel.
Only our fuel, which is $400,000+.
Because we normally pay the vendor directly, they don't pay ours.
But we have it made out to the school.
Only this time.
Okay, that's the confusion.
So they had a software problem, and so they end up paying the whole bill for everybody, and we're just reimbursing them.
Normally that's not how it happens.
Sorry.
Okay.
You all explained very well.
Thank you.
In effect, the school board was advancing the fuel for the county, and the county's reimbursement.
It's just like the day it pays, and then the sun comes back and says, here you go.
Huh? Anyway, this one here was our, it has the accounts payable and payroll ratified February for $1,464,475.25, but I had questions on this last one here. Okay.
The March one?
Yeah, March.
Yeah.
March.
Let's see what I had here.
You have to pay. Look right up here. I missed one.
Yeah, he's helping me with my stuff here.
You keep me in line, sir.
Okay, on page one,
March 41,
Robinson, Farmer, and Cox.
That's our annual audit.
Yeah, that's the annual audit, $41,000. My question is, this has been discussed in the past, and when do we plan on taking bids?
I think next year is
that concern.
This is our last year for our audit. With okay. Robinson, Farmer, Cox, it's going to be going out to bid come, you know, probably December.
What do we do every 3 years?
It was 3 years with a 2 year extension.
Okay.
And they haven't raised their price in 5 years on the audit price.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Page six. You might not have an answer. Yeah.
Is it 210? 210.
Okay.
Page six.
Number 210.
Okay.
Professional services.
That was for the county administrator.
And that's why I was wondering.
I think it's part of CSA services.
That's sheriff.
Oh, sheriff's office. Sure. Yes, right.
The sheriff one. That's sort of seems like out of place or something there. What did we do there?
I think it's psychological testing of applicants.
Yeah, but I don't know that we had a
credit
health.
It may be confidential.
What? No, yes. It's psychological testing.
It's a psych
applicants.
Test for new applicants.
Okay, to make sure they are.
It's part of
we don't do every one. I don't think
we're not required to take those.
No.
For sworn officers.
Yes, all the sworn officers, okay. Everyone they hire, the sheriff said.
So we.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make a density. Mental health.
Bob and I would not pass that.
You and Bob wouldn't pass it. Okay. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
We're on page 11.
Page 11.
412.
That's our
lease rent. You say Pleasant Grove, and then you go out with a lease on that. And I'm just wondering, you don't have much traffic out there.
What number, sir?
That's 412 on page 11.
Okay.
That's for two copy machines. That's both Pleasant Grove and the community center. That's for two different copiers at two locations.
Separate.
Three copiers.
So one is the Pleasant Grove, and you have two more, two
it's
other
the,
places.
It's the Parks and Rec copiers.
Parks and Rec moved there.
You see, they moved.
The headquarters of Parks and Rec is the Pleasant Grove, but it's for all the Parks and Rec.
Still
copiers.
Has two of them at the community center.
Okay, because I was just wondering, you don't have much traffic there. So that answers my question. Okay,
it has improved, Don.
Huh?
It's picked up.
Yes. Okay.
Anything? All right. Are we ready for a motion on consent agenda?
So made with the
changes
and all the way down through MC.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Mr. Weaver made the motion. Second by Ms. Sheridan. All in favor?
All right.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0. Do we have any unfinished business?
Just I sent you an email.
Yes.
Your red folders are there.
Right. Red
electronic,
folders.
Hard copy, whatever. All, right. All the stuff is
and
there.
You
if you have any questions,
date.
Just contact.
Is there a deadline on it?
I think I put the deadline out. I think
yeah,
I said
May
1st.
First.
Or May 1st.
May
1st.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm in too good a mood
May
tonight to
first.
Be doing that survey.
All
indeed.
Right.
Just
business.
Nominated
10,000 comedians out of work.
They say to laugh is good for you. Any new business? We've had enough jokes tonight.
Wait till we approve the Pride Award.
All right. I would now like to open our second public comments. Would anyone would like to speak to the board, please come to the mic, give your name and address, and
someone.
You have 5 minutes.
Someone. I don't want to go home yet.
Okay, if
say.
Not, I will close public comment. I'd like to have a motion to adjourn.
So my second.
All right, we got all kind of motions.
Yeah.
4:00, 9:06.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye. 8:29, baby.
See you all May.
That's what I'm talking about.
6.
Huh?
Because I was quiet tonight.
Thank you, Lord.